Because my first 2 years in office, I was actually appointed to replace John Plank, who died in office. And then I ran twice. So I put in 10 years. I just didn't know if I could put in 14. Brad Bonkowski, he's a great guy. No, he'll do real well. So, very capable.
Bless you over there.
Hey, Kathy, goodness gracious. It sounds like you're on the verge of getting a cold. You know, I have a little pharmaceutical in my purse. No. Echinacea and vitamin C. Nothing illegal.
It's not illegal in Washington State anymore.
What's not legal? Oh, it is legal, you mean. Small portions. Yeah. Well, what is the quantity? 2 ounces or something an ounce?
I just thought that was pretty funny. They showed that one day when it became legal, they're all on their doing it. They're like, they're not supposed to be out in the public. They're supposed to be inside your house.
Right. But they were doing it in full view.
that's Washington for you.
You can't buy it. Or just see it, right? I don't know. Which is itself.
Not that legally, no. They'll get it illegally.
Right.
From those little cottage industries, you know, that pop up all when there's a demand.
I got one bad connection where you said hello and you couldn't hear me, and I'll call back and I have to
voicemail for John.
Okay. Well, hopefully he'll call you back. Hopefully he'll jog his memory and realize where he's supposed to be.
Well, that's not a voicemail. So,
everybody's got their jack
pants. You do? Yeah. Yes. Color coordinated.
Okay.
We all have the same color.
Oh. I have more in the car. I only get you and R.
With one.
I have two in my pocket. I had to get one to Larry because I don't know if we'll be here next month, but I think you will. So.
You know, Patrick, I have his office number. He's at the office. Why don't you try his office number? Okay.
Okay, go for it.
883-2908.
Shelly, you want some water?
Sure. That'd be great, Jim. Thank you.
So we talked about that before the year?
Thankfully, it's just water.
So, well, after every Wednesday for a million years, that was money.
Exactly.
Yeah, I thought it was the first time I read it. I thought it was a typo.
Now you know who reads the agendas.
That's right. I tried to put it in bold in the emails and everything else. So.
But, yeah,
I reminded me about everything.
I wonder when my Packer got delivered, I figured something was up.
Yeah, the Kindle really, this guy, too.
Okay, great.
call the meeting to order of Monday, December 10th, Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization at 438 at the Community Center, 851 East William Street in Carson City. The Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization is pleased to make reasonable accommodations for members of the public who are disabled and wish to attend the meeting. If special arrangements for the meeting are necessary, please notify Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization staff in writing at 3505 Buddeye Way, Carson City, Nevada, 89701, or notify by email ppittinger@carson.org. That's Patrick Pittinger at 887-2355. Requests are required several days in advance of the meeting. Determination of a quorum, please.
Chairperson Desjardins, Vice Chairperson Foltz.
Here.
Member Aldean.
Here.
Member Fierro.
Here.
Member Mallory.
Here.
Member McKenna. Member Smolinski.
Here.
Ex officio Member Van Havel.
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you. Public comment. Members of the public who wish to address the MPO may approach the podium and speak on matters related to the Metropolitan Planning Organization. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person per topic. If your item requires extended discussion, please request the chair to calendar the matter for a future meeting. No action may be taken upon a matter raised under this item of the agenda until the matter itself has been specifically included on an agenda as an item upon which action may be taken. Is there any member of the public who wishes to address the Campo Board? Seeing none, we'll move on to item C, approval of the minutes of October 10th.
So moved. Second.
Moved by Commissioner Fierro and second by Member Mallory. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Abstain.
One abstention. Approved. On to item D, agenda management notice. Items on the agenda may be taken out of order. Campo may combine two or more agenda items for consideration, and Campo may remove any item from the agenda or delay discussion relating to an item on the agenda at any time. Are there any changes to the agenda?
No, sir.
Thank you. Disclosures. Any member of the MPO that may wish to explain any contact with the public regarding an item on the agenda or business of the MPO? Does anyone want to make a disclosure? Okay, seeing none. Move on to item F1. And I think,
thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. This is an action item. As most of you probably know, the 2010 census released their urbanized area information earlier this year, and there were some changes to the Carson City urbanized area. And the federal regulation requires that the planning area boundaries encompass the entire urbanized area. So with the release of the 2010 information, the geography actually was a little bit, there's a little bit change in Douglas County. If you can refer to the attached map, the urbanized area did actually expand beyond what our existing planning area is. And so staff worked with Douglas County to propose a logical adjustment to the planning area boundaries that would encompass the new urbanized area. And it's actually, a little thought went behind it. It does conform to the geography that we use for our travel demand model when we're doing our traffic forecasts and validations. So, again, working with Douglas County staff, we came to this, mutual agreement, and are proposing that the Campo Metropolitan Planning Area be adjusted as shown. And if this board does support that and approve that tonight, then we will submit a letter to the governor, as is protocol, to have the Metropolitan Planning Area boundaries officially changed.
I'm assuming, Dan, that we understand that it conforms with the travel demand modeling, which I'm assuming conforms to the Douglas County Master Plan in terms of where anticipated new growth is going?
That is correct. We kind of went back and forth and pitched a few different ideas, but again, when we looked at it, really where the development is and, you know, working with member Fultz here and his planning director, we identified those areas where the growth boundaries occur and the land use designations as well. So there might be a few areas kind of on the fringe where it shows rural undeveloped land, but for the most part, this is all within the developable area of Douglas County's plan.
Okay, and the time frames are consistent as well. I mean, between the travel demand model and the what's anticipated in terms of areas of growth within the master plan. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're required to basically set the planning area boundaries to anticipate, you know, what could be reasonably expected growth within a 20-year planning horizon that kind of matched the RTP, the Regional Transportation Plan.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks for your help with that, Dan. I appreciate it. Some of the areas, like you mentioned, are on the fringe and probably are not going to be developed in that time period, but it's not unlike, you know, some of the similar areas in Carson City, I suppose.
You ready for a motion?
Yeah.
I move to approve the proposed adjustment to the...
Wait, just 1 second. We haven't had public comment. Is there any member of the public that would like to speak on this item? Okay, then we're ready for a motion.
I move to approve the proposed adjustment to the Campo Metropolitan Planning Area boundary and to authorize the chair to submit a letter to Governor Sandoval requesting his support and approval of the boundary adjustment.
I'll second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Carries unanimously. Motion by Mr. Mallory and second by Mr.
Smolensky.
Thank you. Okay. Item F2. Information on an inventory and needs assessment of the bike route signage in Carson City.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. This is actually an information-only item. And if you might recall, when we developed the work program for this year, one of the tasks that we wanted to include was basically just an inventory of our existing signage on our bike routes and any kind of needs assessment that we could do to at least identify room for what needs to be improved. And so with that, myself and other staff of Carson City Public Works went out and did just that, just took an inventory of all our bike routes. In the attached summary report, you can see attachment A shows all those routes within the city. And we just kind of looked at places where signage was missing or could be updated or just areas that were lacking consistency and just quick fixes. And so this report is, I don't want to really call it a draft, but it's kind of a living document. We see it as a guide to go forward to make some of these improvements. And as we, you know, start to invest a little bit more in that bike route signage, you know, we can update this report to just kind of track what improvements need to be made. And so, like I said, this is an information model when we're doing our traffic forecasts and validations. So again, working with Douglas County staff, we came to this, you know, mutual agreement and are proposing that the Campo Metropolitan Planning Area be adjusted as shown. And if this board does support that and approve that tonight, then we will submit a letter to the governor, as is protocol, to have the Metropolitan Planning Area boundaries officially changed.
I'm assuming, Dan, that we understand that it conforms with the travel demand modeling, which I'm assuming conforms to the Douglas County Master Plan in terms of where anticipated new growth is going?
That is correct. We kind of went back and forth and pitched a few different ideas, but again, when we looked at it, really where the development is and, you know, working with member Fultz here and his planning director, we identified those areas where the growth boundaries occur and the land use designations as well. So there might be a few areas kind of on the fringe where it shows rural undeveloped land, but for the most part, this is all within the developable area of Douglas County's plan.
Okay, and the time frames are consistent as well. I mean, between the travel demand model and the what's anticipated in terms of areas of growth within the master plan. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're required to basically set the planning area boundaries to anticipate, you know, what could be reasonably expected growth within a 20-year planning horizon that kind of match the RTP, the Regional Transportation Plan.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks for your help with that, Dan. I appreciate it. Some of the areas, like you mentioned, are on the fringe and probably are not going to be developed in that time period, but it's not unlike, you know, some of the similar areas in Carson City, I suppose.
You ready for a motion?
Yeah.
I move to approve the proposed adjustment to the...
Wait, just 1 second. We haven't had public comment yet. Is there any member of the public that would like to speak on this item? Okay, then we're ready for a motion.
I move to approve the proposed adjustment to the Campo Metropolitan Planning Area boundary and to authorize the chair to submit a letter to Governor Sandoval requesting his support and approval of the boundary adjustment.
I'll second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Carries unanimously. Motion by Mr. Mallory and second by Mr.
Smolensky.
Thank you. Okay. Item F2. Information on an inventory and needs assessment of the bike route signage in Carson City.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. This is actually an information-only item. And if you might recall, when we developed the work program for this year, one of the tasks that we wanted to include was basically just an inventory of our existing signage on our bike routes and any kind of needs assessment that we could do to at least identify room for what needs to be improved. And so with that, myself and other staff of Carson City Public Works went out and did just that, just took an inventory of all our bike routes. In the attached summary report, you can see attachment A shows all those routes within the city. And we just kind of looked at places where signage was missing or could be updated or just areas that were lacking consistency and just quick fixes. And so this report is, I don't want to really call it a draft, but it's kind of a living document. We see it as a guide to go forward to make some of these improvements. And as we, you know, start to invest a little bit more in that bike route signage, you know, we can update this report to just kind of track what improvements need to be made. And so, like I said, this is information. If you have any questions, I'd be Let me entertain them. Thank you.
Was this developed in concert with Muscle Powered, or did they have any input? I'm just curious. I mean, obviously, this is something that's near and dear to them.
Sure. Actually, as a matter of fact, they did have some input. One of the members, particularly when you look at the map on Attachment A, and for Route 395, which is the blue line, if you look to the very north, and there's that kind of, they showed two different routes coming in and off of basically old 395. Mm-hmm. One goes down Hobart, and the other goes down Lakeview. And they did recommend that that route be rerouted, I guess, down Lakeview, because it's a little more direct, and there's less grade involved, too. So, and that was a direct comment. We also, a lot of this came out of when we developed our regional transportation plan. We kind of laid the groundwork for some of this as well, and certainly they offered a lot of input. And they, as you probably know, they came out with their own bike map recently, and we really collaborated on that as well.
So, Dan, my assumption is this is a not an action item. It's informational only. So when there is sufficient money to pay for the cost of these upgrades, that's when you'll bring it back to CAMPO for adoption?
Well, to be honest, I hadn't thought that far out, but yeah, we could certainly do that. And I did mention to Member Van Havel earlier, I forward this on to their bike and ped staff as well. Mm-hmm. And I'd spoke a little bit with Bill Story, who's been before this board before, and not putting NDOT on the spot, but we talked about potential funding of purchasing some of the signs specifically on U.S. Highway 50, which, you know, west of the, east of the interchange is maintained by NDOT, and just kind of updating some of that signage for consistency. So I don't see this as, you know, I'd like to, as much as I'd like to say that we kind of just take care of it in one fell swoop, I imagine it might be a little piecemeal, you know, certain routes at a time. So that's why I hadn't thought about a formal adoption of a plan.
You want to remain flexible. My only other comment is that, you know, signage is very practical and very useful, but it also can create clutter, visual clutter. So I think we have to be a little bit, you know, cautious about the number of signs that, you know, start proliferating even along the bike routes. Then, you know, we need to have the minimal number necessary to give people necessary direction, but I don't think we want to go beyond that, only because then we'll start getting complaints about, you know, it being aesthetically offensive to people, just like the signage on some of our jack stops. So just kind of an FYI.
No, thank you for that comment. It's agreed. And from a budget perspective, that's good as well.
Dan, go ahead.
Dan, I have a quick question. It kind of piggyback on what Commissioner Aldean said. Is there a guideline as to the number of signs? Is there some agency that says you have to have this number of signs within this boundary?
Well, when I was with staff, I was with Rob Fellows, one of our engineers on staff, and he's done a lot of this type of work, and he's pretty knowledgeable in the subject. And basically, you want to convey to the user, the rider, that they're on the route. There's not really a certain number of signage or spacing. It's more like if you're approaching, like, say, a big intersection or a place where a route might intersect, basically to give them just enough information to let them know that they're still on the route that they intend to be on, or if there's a connection, how to make that connection, that sort of thing. So I don't know, Patrick, if there's a general rule of spacing, but...
No, I think your answer was sufficient.
Dan, looks like you put a lot of work into this, and I really appreciate that. It's very thorough, and you put a lot of thought into it. You know, I noticed in there that you talked about a potential future connection between the V&T path back to the Route 1 alignment. Looking at this map, it's not clear to me if that V&T path might also connect.
If you have any questions, I'd be Let me entertain them. Thank you.
Was this developed in concert with Muscle Powered, or did they have any input? I'm just curious. I mean, obviously, this is something that's near and dear to them.
Sure. Actually, as a matter of fact, they did have some input. One of the members, particularly when you look at the map on Attachment A, and for Route 395, which is the blue line, if you look to the very north, and there's that kind of, they showed two different routes coming in and off of basically old 395. Mm-hmm. One goes down Hobart, and the other goes down Lakeview. And they did recommend that that route be rerouted, I guess, down Lakeview, because it's a little more direct, and there's less grade involved, too. So, and that was a direct comment. We also, a lot of this came out of when we developed our regional transportation plan. We kind of laid the groundwork for some of this as well, and certainly they offered a lot of input, and they, as you probably know, they came out with their own bike map recently, and we really collaborated on that as well.
So, Dan, my assumption is this is a not an action item. It's informational only. So when there is sufficient money to pay for the cost of these upgrades, that's when you'll bring it back to CAMPO for adoption?
Well, to be honest, I hadn't thought that far out, but, yeah, we could certainly do that. And I did mention to Member Van Havel earlier, I forward this on to their bike and ped staff as well. Mm-hmm. And I'd spoke a little bit with Bill Story, who's been before this board before, and not putting NDOT on the spot, but we talked about potential funding of purchasing some of the signs specifically on U.S. Highway 50, which, you know, west of the, east of the interchange is maintained by NDOT, and just kind of updating some of that signage for consistency. So I don't see this as, you know, I'd like to, as much as I'd like to say that we kind of just take care of it in one fell swoop, I imagine it might be a little piecemeal, you know, certain routes at a time. So that's why I hadn't thought about a formal adoption of a plan.
Want to remain flexible. My only other comment is that, you know, signage is very practical and very useful, but it also can create clutter, visual clutter, so I think we have to be a little bit, you know, cautious about the number of signs that, you know, start proliferating even along the bike routes. Then, you know, we need to have the minimal number necessary to give people necessary direction, but I don't think we want to go beyond that, only because then we'll start getting complaints about, you know, it being aesthetically offensive to people, just like the signage on some of our jack stops. So just kind of an FYI.
No, thank you for that comment. It's agreed. And from a budget perspective, that's good as well.
Dan, go ahead.
Dan, I have a quick question. It kind of piggyback on what Commissioner Aldean said. Is there a guideline as to the number of signs? Is there some agency that says you have to have this number of signs within this boundary?
Well, when I was with the staff, when we I was with Rob Fellows, one of our engineers on staff, and he's done a lot of this type of work, and he's pretty knowledgeable on the subject. And basically, you want to convey to the user, the rider, that they're on the route. There's not really a certain number of signage or spacing. It's more like if you're approaching, like, say, a big intersection or a place where a route might intersect, basically to give them just enough information to let them know that they're still on the route that they intend to be on, or if there's a connection, how to make that connection, that sort of thing. So I don't know, Patrick, if there's a general rule of spacing, but...
No, I think your answer was sufficient.
Dan, looks like you put a lot of work into this, and I really appreciate that. It's very thorough, and you put a lot of thought into it. You know, I noticed in there that you talked about a potential future connection between the V&T path back to the Route 1 alignment. Looking at this map, it's not clear to me if that V&T path might also connect back to the Lakeview area. It doesn't say anything about that in there. I'm not sure if that's a topographically or parcel-wise, if that's a possibility or not. Do you know?
Yeah, I see it on my map right now. It kind of looks like the dotted line drops off there at the end, but if that path were to be completed, it would be intended to connect to that neighborhood, that area as well.
I think that's great. That's a really nice area. Charles has joined us, I see. Thank you, Charles. Good to see you, and thanks for allowing me.
I just got a tooth pulled, and I'm having a difficult time talking. My mouth is full of gauze, so you'd have to run the meeting anyways. Thanks.
Well, thanks for coming in under such circumstances. Okay, do we have any comments from the public? Go ahead, Member Fuhrer.
Dan, I've got a question for you. In addition to signage, are there maps like what we are presented at junctions of these bike routes so that if you're on one and you want to possibly stay on the one that you're on or go on another one, at least there's some information to see where the other routes go?
Yeah, as of date, there's not. But one of the things we talked about doing if funding should become available is we're seeing a lot of communities gravitating more to like a wayfinding sign, and that might include like when you're actually on a route, a little map, say, you know, it's the same if you're hiking at a trail and you know one of the forest preserves or something, that as you're riding along you come across a connection, you can see kind of system wide where you're headed or how to get, you know, from point A to point B, sort of thing. So that's something we want to look at, explore more in the future too. And again, it's funding related, but we would actually like to incorporate some of that wayfinding signage, but not too much, not as declutter anything. So it's kind of that fine line. So.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Dan, I'd like to ask you a question as well. When you look at these maps, especially coming in from the south going out to the east, coming in from the east going out to the north, or coming in from the north and getting to downtown, it basically bypasses facilities, businesses, hotels, restaurants, and things that a bicycle tourist traveler would probably want to use. Is that correct?
No, I think that's a fair assessment, too. The routes have been established, but I was talking a little bit with, again, NDOT staff, Bill Story, and he's working with kind of a coalition of state DOTs to route basically a national bikeway, and that's certainly one of those issues that's important, especially for, you know, long-distance travelers to have these facilities and amenities. And, again, I think that's where, like Member Fierro said, that the wayfinding signage would be appropriate because it's kind of a fine line. It's not everyone wants to ride down Carson Street for safety reasons, you know. It just depends on their level of how comfortable they are. But at the same time, you're right, that's where a lot of services are. So if we did have that kind of wayfinding signage, we could also use it to point to specific services as well.
Will there be something that somebody that's not familiar with the area know how to get to a bicycle shop, you know, a hotel, a restaurant, something like that? Because this does go by Gold Dust West, but that's the only one I really see.
I think in its existing, as it stands now, that we really kind of lack some of that. But it's something that I personally would like to see if we're going to have a more complete system, especially because bicycle tourism, as I understand it, is kind of becoming more of a popular thing. So,
Go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, if I may chime in, as far as the statewide bicycle maps that were completed recently with our statewide bicycle plan, they did identify various amenities around the state where you could get lodging, bicycle shops, and so on. And the coordination that the staff has had with my team at the DOT, I would think that if we were to develop this into a map for some type of general circulation, that we would work with our staff to incorporate those same kinds of things. So I'm
to the Lakeview area, it doesn't say anything about that in there. I'm not sure if that's a topographically or parcel wise if that's a possibility or not. Do you know?
Yeah, I see it on my map right now. It kind of looks like the dotted line drops off there at the end, but if that path were to be completed, it would be intended to connect to that neighborhood, that area as well.
I think that's great. That's a really nice area. Charles has joined us, I see. Thank you, Charles. Good to see you, and thanks for allowing
me. I just got a tooth pulled, and I'm having a difficult time talking. My mouth is full of gauze, so you'd have to run the meeting anyways. Thanks.
Well, thanks for coming in under such circumstances. Okay, do we have any comments from the public? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Member Fuhrer.
Dan, I've got a question for you. In addition to signage, are there maps like what we are presented at junctions of these bike routes so that if you're on one and you want to possibly stay on the one that you're on or go on another one, at least there's some information to see where the other routes go?
Yeah, as of date, there's not. But one of the things we talked about doing if funding should become available is we're seeing a lot of communities gravitating more to like a wayfinding sign, and that might include like when you're actually on a route, a little map, say, it's the same if you're hiking at a trail and one of the forest preserves or something, that as you're riding along you come across a connection, you can see kind of system wide where you're headed or how to get from point A to point B, sort of thing. So that's something we want to look at, explore more in the future too. And again, it's funding related, but we would actually like to incorporate some of that wayfinding signage, but not too much, not as declutter anything. So it's kind of that fine line. So.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Dan, I'd like to ask you a question as well. When you look at these maps, especially coming in from the south going out to the east, coming in from the east going out to the north, or coming in from the north and getting to downtown, it basically bypasses facilities, businesses, hotels, restaurants, and things that a bicycle tourist traveler would probably want to use. Is that correct?
I think that's a fair assessment, too. The routes have been established, but I was talking a little bit with, NDOT staff, Bill Story, and he's working with kind of a coalition of state DOTs to route basically a national bikeway, and that's certainly one of those issues that's important, especially for long-distance travelers to have these facilities and amenities. And again, I think that's where, like Member Fierro said, that the wayfinding signage would be appropriate, because it's kind of a fine line. It's not everyone wants to ride down Carson Street for safety reasons. It just depends on their level of how comfortable they are. But at the same time, you're right, that's where a lot of services are. So if we did have that kind of wayfinding signage, we could also use it to point to specific services as well.
Will there be something that somebody that's not familiar with the area know how to get to a bicycle shop, a hotel, a restaurant, something like that? Because this does go by Gold Dust West, but that's the only one I really see.
I think in its existing, as it stands now, that we really kind of lack some of that. But it's something that I personally would like to see if we're going to have a more complete system, especially because bicycle tourism, as I understand it, is kind of becoming more of a popular thing. So,
Go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, if I may chime in, as far as the statewide bicycle maps that were completed recently with our statewide bicycle plan, they did identify various amenities around the state where you could get lodging, bicycle shops, and so on. And the coordination that the staff has had with my team at the DOT, I would think that if we were to develop this into a map for some type of general circulation, that we would work with our staff to incorporate those same kinds of things. So I'm feel pretty confident about that.
Go ahead, Shelley.
My only concern would be, you know, how do you select which businesses to represent on the map? Are you to charge a fee for having them placed on the map because that's helping to promote their business? My assumption would be, and correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, if I were going to a community to bicycle, I wouldn't bicycle to the community. I would drive to the community and maybe kind of familiarize myself with the lay of the land and then, you know, take advantage of the bike routes. I appreciate the willingness to make this all things to all people, but I'm just concerned that if we clutter it up too much, you know, it may be not as valuable as it would be if we just depict the routes. And the wayfinding signage that you're referring to, Dan, I think is very important. You know, you are here and within the system, the network of pathways. To me, that's far more important than, you know, representing where the nearest McDonald's is. And again, I think you're going to have a problem determining who should have a presence on the map and who should be excluded.
I agree with that. And I think, as you recall, maybe it was about a year and a half or so ago, we did some of the, just the pedestrian wayfinding downtown, and we did steer clear of endorsing any kind of specific business or anything, more just a general, these services are in this direction sort of thing, or maybe for institutions, you know, we kind of called out those as well. But from a retail perspective, I think we would want to just say food, lodging kind of thing and keep it general if we were to go that route.
Any other comments from the board? Comments from the general public? Okay, seeing none. I appreciate, the work you put into this. Looks like we've got a lot of things to think about for the implementation, so appreciate that. That was an informational item, so we're on to item G, internal communications and administrative matters. Does staff have any?
Just for the next meeting, we expect to have, well, we have three items at the moment that we plan. One is information about an administrative modification to the transportation improvement program, which is smaller than an amendment. It doesn't require multiple meetings or public comment periods. We received a letter today officially notifying us that Campbell would not be receiving a chunk of state money that we've received in the past. We'll discuss that at the next meeting. And finally, we may have action on further action on planning agreements with the Nevada Department of Transportation as necessary. That's it.
Are there any items that staff would like to see brought forward for future agenda item this time? Okay. Board comments? Item H, board comments. Does the board have any comments they'd like to bring forward? Okay, seeing none, we're on to item I, public comment. Any member of the public wish to address the board on any item? Seeing none, I accept a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Okay.
5 minutes,
Shelley.
5 minutes. Thank you.
The RTC meeting will begin in 5 minutes. For our benefit of our viewing public, consisting of two people in person, so you have nothing better to do.
Thanks, Shelley.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. You did a good job.
Yep.
Thank you.
pretty confident about that.
Go ahead, Shelley.
My only concern would be, you know, how do you select which businesses to represent on the map? Are you to charge a fee for having them placed on the map because that's helping to promote their business? My assumption would be, and correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, if I were going to a community to bicycle, I wouldn't bicycle to the community. I would drive to the community and maybe kind of familiarize myself with the lay of the land and then, you know, take advantage of the bike routes. I appreciate the willingness to make this all things to all people, but I'm just concerned that if we clutter it up too much, you know, it may be not as valuable as it would be if we just depict the routes. And the wayfinding signage that you're referring to, Dan, I think is very important. You know, you are here and within the system, the network of pathways. To me, that's far more important than, you know, representing where the nearest McDonald's is. And again, I think you're going to have a problem determining who should have a presence on the map and who should be excluded.
I agree with that. And I think, as you recall, maybe it was about a year and a half or so ago, we did some of the, just the pedestrian wayfinding downtown, and we did steer clear of endorsing any kind of specific business or anything, more just a general, these services are in this direction sort of thing, or maybe for institutions, you know, we kind of called out those as well. But from a retail perspective, I think we would want to just say food, lodging kind of thing and keep it general if we were to go that route.
Any other comments from the board? Comments from the general public? Okay, seeing none. I appreciate, the work you put into this. Looks like we've got a lot of things to think about for the implementation, so appreciate that. That was an informational item, so we're on to item G, internal communications and administrative matters. Does staff have any?
Just for the next meeting, we expect to have, well, we have three items at the moment that we plan. One is information about an administrative modification to the transportation improvement program, which is smaller than an amendment. It doesn't require multiple meetings or public comment periods. We received a letter today officially notifying us that Campbell would not be receiving a chunk of state money that we've received in the past. We'll discuss that at the next meeting. And finally, we may have action on further action on planning agreements with the Nevada Department of Transportation as necessary. That's it.
Are there any items that staff would like to see brought forward for a future agenda item this time? Okay. Board comments? Item H, board comments. Does the board have any comments they'd like to bring forward? Okay, seeing none, we're on to item I, public comment. Any member of the public wish to address the board on any item? Seeing none, I accept a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Okay.
5 minutes.
Thank you.
The RTC meeting will begin in 5 minutes. For our benefit of our viewing public, consisting of two people in Carson City, who have nothing better to do.
Thanks, Shelley.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. You did a good job.
o'clock. Thank you. I'm trying to calm down after not making it back to the lake on time.
Oh, my goodness, you weren't trail manager, were you?
Oh, yeah, God. No. I was BMP.
You were BMP. Oh, good for you. Who's
BMP? This client's all got $1 million in BMPs on her property up there.
Who is this? One of your clients?
Shady Lake Complex.
Yeah. And Shady Lake, well, formerly owned by Carol Terry.
I don't know. Joyce has owned it for a long time.
Just put Joyce.
Yeah.
Oh.
You know Joyce?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm
Well, if you know Joyce, you know why I'm late. Joyce is almost 90, and she's still going strong.
I know. That's great. That's great. Does she have any buyers for the
No, but we may have. I have sold the Danny's down there, and so it's kind of like the old Danny's was. I didn't get much for it, but at least we're getting cash out of it.
Yeah. So she's just in the process of liquidating a lot of
money. No, Joyce would continue going, but Joyce was pushing 90, and her daughter and son are saying, "We got enough. We don't want the stuff. You're gonna die." So
just sell them, give us the cash.
Well, there's no tenant in there. The building needs a lot of modification because they trashed it. And,
oh,
yeah,
but the deposit obviously wasn't enough to cover the lease for TC. Oh, you're very welcome. It was my pleasure. Absolutely. Take care.
Shelly, she's a renter in there. They were operating, but she was not collecting rent for a substantial period of time.
And that's how they repay her generosity.
Just to keep it. Yeah, just keep the building so we can sell it. You know how it is.
Oh,
real estate, real estate is not what people think it is.
Okay.
Okay.
Can you say yes or no?
Oh, I can ask you. Presence. Up, down. Okay. Our mouth is full of grubs.
Hand signals. Oh, you had a
motor?
Is that enough?
Yeah,
it's hard to talk.
Good evening, everyone. We'll call this meeting of the Carson City Regional Transportation Commission to order. The date is Monday, December 10th, 2012. We're in the Sierra Room at the Community Center. First item on the agenda is a roll call to determine a quorum. Kathy?
Chairperson Aldine.
Here.
Vice Chairperson Mallory.
Here.
Commissioner Desjardins.
Here.
Commissioner McKenna.
Here.
Commissioner Smolenski.
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you. Next item is public comment. Members of the public who wish to address the Regional Transportation Commission may approach the podium and speak on matters related to the RTC. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person or topic. If your item requires extended discussion, please see me after the meeting, and we will agendize it for a future Regional Transportation Committee or Commission meeting. Is there any public comment? All right, seeing none, we'll close public comment, move on to the next item, which is the approval of a set of minutes from October 10th, 2012. Has everyone had a chance to review the minutes, and are there any suggested changes, additions, deletions? I have one clerical change that I'll submit to Kathy. Any other changes? Okay. Would someone care to make a motion to approve as amended?
So moved. Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any comments on the question? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Next item is agenda management. Any changes to the agenda, Patrick or Dan?
Nope, no changes from staff.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve the agenda as posted?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Next item is disclosures. Does any member of the commission wish to disclose or explain any contact with the public regarding any item on this evening's agenda or any business related to the committee?
Ooh,
on I'm trying to calm down after not making it back to the lake on time.
Oh, my goodness, you weren't trail man, were you?
Oh, my God. I was BMP.
You were BMP. Oh, good for you. Who was BMP?
This client's all got $1 million in BMPs on her property up there.
Who is this? One of your clients?
Shady Lake Complex.
Yeah.
And
Shady Lake, well, formerly owned by Carol Terry.
I don't know. Joyce has owned it for a long time.
Just put Joyce.
I, yeah.
Oh.
You know Joyce?
I can turn around.
I'm sorry.
Well, if you know Joyce, you know why I'm late. Joyce is almost 90, and she's still going strong.
I know, that's great. That's great. Does she have any buyers for
no? No, but we may have. I sold the Danny's down there, and so it's kind of the old Danny's was. I didn't get much for it, but at least we're getting the cash out of it.
Yeah. So she's just
No, she Joyce would continue going, but Joyce is pushing 90, and her daughter and son are safe. We got enough. We don't want the stuff. You're gonna die. So
just saw them give us the cash.
Well, there's no tenant in there. The building needs a lot of modification because they trashed it. And,
oh, the deposit obviously wasn't enough to cover the lease. Oh, you're very welcome. It was my pleasure.
They were operating, but she was not collecting rent for a substantial period of time.
And that's how they repay her generosity.
Just to keep the building. Yeah, just keep the building. Because we can sell it. I mean, buyers. You know how it is.
Oh,
real,
I do.
Real estate is not what people think it is.
Good evening, everyone. We'll call this meeting of the Carson City Regional Transportation Commission to order. The date is Monday, December 10th, 2012. We're in the Sierra Room at the Community Center. First item on the agenda is a roll call to determine a quorum. Kathy?
Chairperson Aldine.
Here.
Vice Chairperson Mallory.
Here.
Commissioner Desjardins.
Here.
Commissioner McKenna.
Here.
Commissioner Smolenski.
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you. Next item is public comment. Members of the public who wish to address the Regional Transportation Commission may approach the podium and speak on matters related to the RTC. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person or topic. If your item requires extended discussion, please see me after the meeting, and we will agendize it for a future Regional Transportation Committee or Commission meeting. Is there any public comment? All right, seeing none, we'll close public comment, move on to the next item, which is the approval of a set of minutes from October 10th, 2012. Has everyone had a chance to review the minutes, and are there any suggested changes, additions, deletions? I have one clerical change that I'll submit to Kathy. Any other changes? Okay. Would someone care to make a motion to approve as amended?
So moved. Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any comments on the question? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Next item is agenda management. Any changes to the agenda, Patrick or Dan?
Nope, no changes from staff.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve the agenda as posted?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Next item is disclosures. Does any member of the commission wish to disclose or explain any contact with the public regarding any item on this evening's agenda or any business related to the commission? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to the first public meeting item, which is F1, and it has to do with the purchasing of a low-floor transit bus. Patrick.
I will be handling that one this evening. At the previous meeting, there was an action to approve our membership in a Minnesota purchasing consortium for the purpose of making it possible for us to acquire a vehicle. This is the proposed vehicle will be identical to the most recent purple painted bus that we have. It's a 35-foot Eldorado National bus. It's on the same chassis as the most recent one purchased as well. It's a very slight increase from the last purchase, which is to be expected. This will give us a total of seven, which we believe will be sufficient to serve our four bus routes. We've been wanting sometimes for the seventh bus. We did just acquire recently three small green buses to renew our paratransit fleet. This will allow us to, I believe, make sure that we always have purple buses, larger ones, on the fixed route service. The total cost is $217,388. Approximately 83% of that cost will be covered by the Federal Transit Administration. And now I realize I have an opportunity to mention what's already in the form, which is that we do not expect for the first time in years to have state matching funds available. In recent years, CAMPO has received $37,500 a year that was available to match purchases such as this. Previously, that was split with Douglas County. After Douglas County stopped receiving those funds, Carson City was receiving all of it. So, for example, earlier this year when we acquired three small green buses, we did get $37,500. Unfortunately, we've been informed by the Nevada Department of Transportation that funding source is no longer available. The source was actually the interest that was coming off of the highway fund, and because the highway fund balance is so much lower than it used to be and the interest is so much lower, that those funds are no longer available. So we expect the local share to be just under $37,000, which is 17%.
Patrick, is it reasonable to assume that at some point in the future that if the economy recovers and interest rates increase, that those funds may be restored?
Yes, and the letter I received today from Director Malfabon, indicated that they would something positive that they would keep their eye on.
So the program is not being eliminated, it's just unfunded at the present
moment?
Yes,
suspended at the current time, that's my understanding.
Okay. The question I have is, now that you mentioned in your report that Fleet Services is on a 4-day work week, and so consequently, if there's a breakdown Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, there's no one to repair the vehicles. Have we identified a private repair shop that we could use in the event of an emergency, if we have multiple?
Actually, we now have, and if necessary, Darren can talk more about it, but we do have on-call policies that we have.
Okay.
That we've put into place where a mechanic can be called in and perform. Sometimes it's as simple as it's a safety issue if your turn signals don't work, for example. But someone can be called in, for example, on a Saturday and perform that, and the bus can go back out. So we haven't seen the need to go that route. We've instead addressed it with our own staff.
Okay. Well, I'm wondering if it would be less expensive to use a private repair shop rather than paying time and a half.
It's really not. We had this service for Saturdays and Sundays before, and mm-hmm. so we just added one more day to it, and we've been monitoring it. It's not a burden to us so far. So.
Okay. All right. Any questions by members of the commission on this item? Okay, we'll open it up for public comment. Any comments by members of the public? Jeff, you look entirely too comfortable out there. No comments? Okay, all right. Bring it back to the commission. Would somebody care to make a motion?
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, I would like to make a motion to approve the purchase of one 35-foot low-floor transit bus from Eldorado National in the amount of $217,388.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Any comments on the question? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Item F2 has to do with some amendments to our policies and procedures. Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to the first public meeting item, which is F1. And it has to do with the purchasing of a low-floor transit bus. Patrick.
I will be handling that one this evening. At the previous meeting, there was an action to approve our membership in a Minnesota purchasing consortium for the purpose of making it possible for us to acquire a vehicle. This is the proposed vehicle will be identical to the most recent purple painted bus that we have. It's a 35-foot Eldorado National bus. It's on the same chassis as the most recent one purchased as well. It's a very slight increase from the last purchase, which is to be expected. This will give us a total of seven, which we believe will be sufficient to serve our four bus routes. We've been wanting sometimes for the seventh bus. We did just acquire recently three small green buses to renew our paratransit fleet. This will allow us to, I believe, make sure that we always have purple buses, larger ones, on the fixed route service. The total cost is $217,388. Approximately 83% of that cost will be covered by the Federal Transit Administration. And now I realize I have an opportunity to mention what's already in the form, which is that we do not expect for the first time in years to have state matching funds available. In recent years, CAMPO has received $37,500 a year that was available to match purchases such as this. Previously, that was split with Douglas County. After Douglas County stopped receiving those funds, Carson City was receiving all of it. So, for example, earlier this year when we acquired three small green buses, we did get $37,500. Unfortunately, we've been informed by the Nevada Department of Transportation that funding source is no longer available. The source was actually the interest that was coming off of the highway fund, and because the highway fund balance is so much lower than it used to be and the interest is so much lower, that those funds are no longer available. So we expect the local share to be just under $37,000, which is 17%.
Patrick, is it reasonable to assume that at some point in the future that if the economy recovers and interest rates increase, that those funds may be restored?
Yes, and the letter I received today from Director Malfabon, indicated that they would something positive that they would keep their eye on it.
So the program is not being eliminated, it's just unfunded at the present moment?
Yes, suspended at the current time, that's my understanding.
Okay. The question I have is, now that you mentioned in your report that Fleet Services is on a 4-day work week, and so consequently, if there's a breakdown Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, there's no one to repair the vehicles. Have we identified a private repair shop that we could use in the event of an emergency, if we have multiple?
Actually, we now have, and if necessary, Derek can talk more about it, but we do have on-call policies that we have.
Okay.
That we've put in the place where a mechanic can be called in and perform. Sometimes it's as simple as it's a safety issue if your turn signals don't work, for example. But someone can be called in, for example, on a Saturday and perform that, and the bus can go back out. So we haven't seen the need to go that route. We've instead addressed it with our own staff.
Okay. Well, I'm wondering if it would be less expensive to use a private repair shop rather than paying time and a half.
It's really not. We had this service for Saturdays and Sundays before, and mm-hmm. so we just added one more day to it, and we've been monitoring it. It's not a burden to us so far. So.
Okay. All right. Any questions by members of the commission on this item? Okay, we'll open it up for public comment. Any comments by members of the public? Jeff, you look entirely too comfortable out there. No comments? Okay, all right. Bring it back to the commission. Would somebody care to make a motion?
Go ahead. Madam Chair, I would like to make a motion to approve the purchase of one 35-foot low-floor transit bus from Eldorado National in the amount of $217,388.
Thank you. Is there a second? Any comments on the question? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Item F2 has to do with some amendments to our policies and procedures. Dan?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is an action item. We are seeking to renew our RTC policies and procedures. It's been quite some time since they were kind of evaluated, and with the recent Board of Supervisors adoption of their Carson City Boards, Committees, and Commissions policies and procedures, we thought it appropriate and a good time to take a look at the RTCs as well. So there's two attachments. One is kind of the final version, which we hope to approve tonight, and then behind that there's a track changes version that kind of shows you some of the items we've changed. So nothing sweeping. It's just basically being updated to reflect, you know, our recent situation, and also to it does reference, it's pursuant to the overall city policies and procedures as well.
Thank you. Joe, I had a question for you. And, you know, maybe it's not significant enough to include, but obviously one of the changes that was made to our interlocal agreement had to do with the fact that Carson City holds title administratively to some of the equipment that was purchased by Campo using federal dollars. Is there any need under paragraph 2.2.2, Jack, maintenance, to refer to the fact that some of this equipment, if not owned outright by Carson City, is basically held in trust by Carson City? Or is that a refinement we don't need to include? That would be on page 3 of the policies and procedures.
Joe Ward from the DA's office. Your concern is that this property is held in trust, correct?
Well, I mean, I'm using that, maybe not in the literal sense. We added paragraph 12 under our interlocal agreement on page 4 that says to administratively hold title to property on behalf of Campo, the grantee, including vehicles, equipment, and real property that is acquired from FTA assistance and used in public transportation service. And we have an obligation to relinquish title to Campo in the event this agreement is terminated. So in reality, that equipment is being held in trust pursuant to the requirement to deed it back to Campo. You know, it's probably a nuance we don't have to worry about, but I thought I'd bring it up, just for old time's sake.
I'm
just being thorough.
I'm comfortable the way
with
it reads.
Okay. All right. Sure. That's fine.
I move to approve the amended RTC policies and procedures.
Okay, we have a motion. Second. Any comments on the question? All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you. We're on to item F2. F3, which is a presentation, a very comprehensive presentation that staff has put together. Thank you very much. I know it took a lot of time to do this, but, you know, I think it'll be very helpful not only to members of this commission but future members of RTC to know where we've been and where we're going and what we hope to accomplish in the near term and long range. So who's going to narrate this, Patrick?
It is big. All right, well, I'll start off trusting that this will come online. So this presentation is planned to be given to the Carson City Board of Supervisors next week, Thursday, at its regular meeting on December 20th. And I'll tell you before I start in here, certain portions of this group has already seen earlier this year, so I won't dwell too long on the ones that.
Dan?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is an action item. We are seeking to renew our RTC policies and procedures. It's been quite some time since they were kind of evaluated, and with the recent Board of Supervisors adoption of their Carson City Boards, Committees, and Commissions policies and procedures, we thought it appropriate and a good time to take a look at the RTCs as well. So there's two attachments. One is kind of the final version, which we hope to approve tonight, and then behind that there's a track changes version that kind of shows you some of the items we've changed. So nothing sweeping. It's just basically being updated to reflect, you know, our recent situation, and also to it does reference, it's pursuant to the overall city policies and procedures as well.
Thank you. Joe, I had a question for you. And, you know, maybe it's not significant enough to include, but obviously one of the changes that was made to our interlocal agreement had to do with the fact that Carson City holds title administratively to some of the equipment that was purchased by Campo using federal dollars. Is there any need under paragraph 2.2.2, Jack, maintenance, to refer to the fact that some of this equipment, if not owned outright by Carson City, is basically held in trust by Carson City? Or is that a refinement we don't need to include? That would be on page 3 of the policies and procedures.
Joe Ward from the DA's office. Your concern is that this property is held in trust, correct?
Well, I mean, I'm using that, maybe not in the literal sense. We added paragraph 12 under our interlocal agreement on page 4 that says to administratively hold title to property on behalf of Campo, the grantee, including vehicles, equipment, and real property that is acquired from FTA assistance and used in public transportation service. And we have an obligation to relinquish title to Campo in the event this agreement is terminated. So in reality, that equipment is being held in trust pursuant to the requirement to deed it back to Campo. You know, it's probably a nuance we don't have to worry about, but I thought I'd bring it up, just for old time's sake.
I'm just being thorough.
I'm comfortable the way
with
it is.
Okay, okay. All right.
Sure.
That's fine.
I move to approve the amended RTC policies and procedures.
Okay, we have a motion. Second. Any comments on the question? All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Aye. Motion carries. Thank you. Moving on to item F2. F3, which is a presentation, a very comprehensive presentation that staff has put together. Thank you very much. I know it took a lot of time to do this, but, you know, I think it'll be very helpful not only to members of this commission but future members of RTC to know where we've been and where we're going and what we hope to accomplish in the near term and long range. So who's going to narrate this, Patrick?
It is big.
All right, well,
I'll start off trusting that this will come online. So this presentation is planned to be given to the Carson City Board of Supervisors next week, Thursday, at its regular meeting on December 20th. And I'll tell you before I start in here, certain portions of this group has already seen earlier this year, so I won't dwell too long on the ones that, frankly, haven't changed since you saw it several months ago. But there are new parts in here as well, and feel free to stop me at any time. All right, we're going to talk about the past, present, and future of the Carson City RTC. Generally speaking, we're covering, we're lumping bicycle and pedestrian as a mode, but we're going to talk about the Jack Transit service, the bicycle and pedestrian non-motorized facilities, and the street system, which, of course, is a relatively large and complex system, including some sub-items there, the freeway itself, the maintenance of the pavement management system, the maintenance activities of the streets, and a discussion on revenues, which quite a bit of you have already seen earlier this year. A little bit of history. The Carson City Community Transit operated previously in Carson City from 2002 to 2005. It was a demand response open to the general public. It carried about 3,000 people a month. We transitioned then to the Jump Around Carson system in October 2005, which consists of four fixed routes, which have changed a little bit over time, but it's still four fixed routes operating 6 days a week. And additionally, the Jack Assist, Americans with Disabilities Act, complementary paratransit service. The ridership for the transit system, what we call the fixed routes, routes 1, 2A, 2B, and 3, carried over 183,000 trips in fiscal year 2012, the year then to June 30th of this year. That was a 21% increase over the previous year. Actually, the one of the months of this year actually set the record for most passengers in a month. And in September, another way to measure this is how many passengers per revenue hour. We had about 15 passengers per revenue hour. So on average, every time there is one of those big purple buses out there, it's picking up 15 people every hour it's out on route. This is a graph that displays the growth in ridership. It's been an increase every single year. As you can see, the curve is pretty steep there in the last year with a 21% increase. We just got the numbers for last month, and for the first 5 months of this fiscal year, we're a little over 12% higher than the previous year. So there will be, we expect, a continuation of this pattern. Some of the highlights, the accomplishments that we've had with the Jack Transit system. The Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization became the designated recipient and grantee of federal funds in 2008, which means that we no longer have to go through the Nevada Department of Transportation and that process to get through. Now, do we get the transit funds directly to us, literally within a day or two of submitting our request? We got back in the good graces of the Nevada Aging and Disability Services Division, receiving an independent living grant. It underwrites the cost of seniors age 60 and over riding free unlimited on the fixed route service only. That's about 39% of the total fixed route ridership. So we're talking about that grant giving us about 70,000 free rides per year. With the help of, and I have to make sure I mention this, Ken Smithson, who's not here with us this evening, but we've done the website, the route and schedules brochure, and we now have a bus and shelter advertising program up and running that is generating monthly income, which is in the eyes of the Federal Transit Administration just as good as our own money. We track it, of course. We also operated a service with Story County as a pilot project at their request. The service was discontinued because there wasn't a high amount of ridership, but it was a good experiment, and we built a good relationship with Story County. I'll also add that we continue to have we have Blue Ghost service that comes into Carson City right now under an agreement with them, and we actually help fund RTC intercity service between Carson City and Washoe County. So we do have good relationships with our neighbors. Additionally, we've worked with Douglas County in the past, and they've chosen instead to take money only through the Nevada Department of Transportation because it was more favorable, but we have a good relationship with them as well. This just shows the current route structure. Shows that we operate 8:30 to 6:30 Monday through Friday, 6:30 to 6:30 Monday through Friday, and 8:30 to 4:30 on Saturdays. And it does show those other services as well. other, frankly, haven't changed since you saw it several months ago. But there are new parts in here as well, and feel free to stop me at any time. All right, we're going to talk about the past, present, and future of the Carson City RTC. Generally speaking, we're covering, we're lumping bicycle and pedestrian as a mode, but we're going to talk about the Jack Transit service, the bicycle and pedestrian non-motorized facilities, and the street system, which, of course, is a relatively large and complex system, including some sub-items there, the freeway itself, the maintenance of the pavement management system, the maintenance activities of the streets, and a discussion on revenues, which quite a bit of you have already seen earlier this year. A little bit of history. The Carson City Community Transit operated previously in Carson City from 2002 to 2005. It was a demand response open to the general public. It carried about 3,000 people a month. We transitioned then to the Jump Around Carson system in October 2005, which consists of four fixed routes, which have changed a little bit over time, but it's still four fixed routes operating 6 days a week. And additionally, the Jack Assist, Americans with Disabilities Act, complementary paratransit service. The ridership for the transit system, what we call the fixed routes, routes 1, 2A, 2B, and 3, carried over 183,000 trips in fiscal year 2012, the year then to June 30th of this year. That was a 21% increase over the previous year. One of the months of this year actually set the record for most passengers in a month. And in September, another way to measure this is how many passengers per revenue hour. We had about 15 passengers per revenue hour. So on average, every time there is one of those big purple buses out there, it's picking up 15 people every hour it's out on route. This is a graph that displays the growth in ridership. It's been an increase every single year. As you can see, the curve is pretty steep there in the last year with a 21% increase. We just got the numbers for last month, and for the first 5 months of this fiscal year, we're a little over 12% higher than the previous year. So there will be, we expect, a continuation of this pattern. Some of the highlights, the accomplishments that we've had with the Jack Transit system. The Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization became the designated recipient and grantee of federal funds in 2008, which means that we no longer have to go through the Nevada Department of Transportation and that process to get through. Now, do we get the transit funds directly to us, literally within a day or two of submitting our request? We got back in the good graces of the Nevada Aging and Disability Services Division, receiving an independent living grant. It underwrites the cost of seniors age 60 and over riding free unlimited on the fixed route service only. That's about 39% of the total fixed route ridership. So we're talking about that grant giving us about 70,000 free rides per year. With the help of, and I have to make sure I mention this, Ken Smithson, who's not here with us this evening, but we've done the website, the route and schedules brochure, and we now have a bus and shelter advertising program up and running that is generating monthly income, which is in the eyes of the Federal Transit Administration just as good as our own money. We track it, of course. We also operated a service with Story County as a pilot project at their request. The service was discontinued because there wasn't a high amount of ridership, but it was a good experiment, and we built a good relationship with Story County. I'll also add that we continue to have we have Blue Ghost service that comes into Carson City right now under an agreement with them, and we actually help fund RTC intercity service between Carson City and Washoe County. So we do have good relationships with our neighbors. Additionally, we've worked with Douglas County in the past, and they've chosen instead to take money only through the Nevada Department of Transportation because it was more favorable, but we have a good relationship with them as well. This just shows the current route structure. Shows that we operate 8:30 to 6:30 Monday through Friday, 6:30 to 6:30 Monday through Friday, and 8:30 to 4:30 on Saturdays. And it does show those other services as well. Other accomplishments, we did revise our Americans with Disabilities Act policy to make sure that we're consistent and compliant with federal regulations. We've, as discussed earlier this meeting, we've differentiated the vehicles, so now we have vehicles that are much better at doing the task assigned, whether it be fixed route or ADA paratransit jack assist service, and they are all the new vehicles we're buying are low floor vehicles. It makes it easier to get on the vehicle and more efficient and better on time for loading unloading wheelchairs. We've also introduced intelligent technology in the form of routing software and real-time information available to the public at ridejack.com. The future, moving forward, we are currently in the early stages of working on an expansion of the city's fleet facility to provide two additional bays. There are four basic bays now that are shared with all vehicles in the city fleet. It's a restricted facility. The goal is to add two bays to allow for jack usage, which would indirectly benefit the rest of the city's operations because that means that there'll be more space in the existing facility when jack buses aren't taking them up anymore, as well as a wash bay and other facilities. We are, as this body knows, dealing with increased ADA ridership. Our metrics are all still increasing. Once again, November is actually a shorter month with a holiday in there, but if you measure on a base of how many ADA trips per day, it was still higher than the previous month once again. So we're still working with that task. Of course, there is demand for additional service, whether it be geographic coverage. We said service hours. I mean, mostly evening service requests, and also service frequency, because right now service is only every hour, and it's unfortunate if you miss your bus, and it's not very flexible. And we're always on the lookout for any funds that we can use to leverage other available federal monies, you know, things like that Aging Disability Services grant or the advertising revenue. Moving on to bicycle and pedestrian improvements, we have been successful in implementing a lot of improvements lately. We have ratcheted up our grant writing efforts, and we've used. These are some of the funding sources. Community development block grants have been extremely useful. It's a wonderful program that actually has less bureaucratic red tape than some of the others that we deal with, and it's 100% federal funding. We've done a lot of work around the Empire Umpire Elementary School, did work on Washington Street from Carson Street over the Aquatic Center, and also on Long Street where sidewalks didn't previously exist. We've used Safe Routes to School funds for actually the path that's shown in this picture. This is off of Hell's Bells by Eagle Valley Middle School, connects two neighborhoods together. And also we've done 9 radar signs around the city, all near schools, which have been very well received. Yes, sir.
This is probably off point, but that area there was blocked off with yellow tape and cones right after the rains. Was it flooded out, or do you have?
I don't personally know. There is a low flow.
Yeah. It was. It flooded out, and quite a bit of debris washed over the road. So we were in the process of cleaning that up. I believe it's done now.
It's open.
Yeah.
Yeah. We actually have other facilities. For example, I went down the linear path that goes underneath the freeway there by the Fifth Street Bridge. And the reason why we have gates on either of those is that you have the ability to close those, because I purposely went down there just with my wife and dog to see what it looked like, and the water was within a few inches of the path, but wasn't even need to close that one. Other improvements, we've used transportation enhancement funds. This is about 4 or 5 years ago. We used it as part of the funding mix on Hot Springs Road, which used to have quite a different look to it. We've used it on East 5th Street from Fairview Drive to Carson River Road for a path and bike lanes. Gonai Road also for bike lanes. Forgot to change that word. Roop Street, it says underway, but now we're finished. I guess the contract isn't closed yet. But the Roop Street project has now been completed. We've had Rec Trails money, which is also a federal federal funds actually acquired by our Parks and Rec Department. We did revise our Americans with Disabilities Act policy to make sure that we're consistent and compliant with federal regulations. We've, as discussed earlier this meeting, we've differentiated the vehicles, so now we have vehicles that are much better at doing the task assigned, whether it be fixed route or ADA paratransit jack assist service. And they are, all the new vehicles we're buying are low floor vehicles. It makes it easier to get on the vehicle and more efficient and better on time for loading, unloading wheelchairs. We've also introduced intelligent technology in the form of routing software and real-time information available to the public at ridejack.com. The future, moving forward, we are currently in the early stages of working on an expansion of the city's fleet facility to provide two additional bays, or four basic bays now, that are shared with all vehicles in the city fleet. It's a restricted facility. The goal is to add two bays to allow for jack usage, which would indirectly benefit the rest of the city's operations, because that means that there'll be more space in the existing facility when jack buses aren't taking them up anymore, as well as a wash bay and other facilities. We are, as this body knows, dealing with increased ADA ridership. Our metrics are all still increasing. Once again, November is actually a shorter month with a holiday in there, but if you measure on a base of how many ADA trips per day, it was still higher than the previous month once again. So we're still working with that task. Of course, there is demand for additional service, whether it be geographic coverage. When we said service hours, I mean mostly evening service requests, and also service frequency, because right now service is only every hour, and it's unfortunate if you miss your bus, and it's not very flexible. And we're always on the lookout for any funds that we can use to leverage other available federal monies, you know, things like that Aging Disability Services grant or the advertising revenue. Moving on to bicycle and pedestrian improvements, we have been successful in implementing a lot of improvements lately. We have ratcheted up our grant writing efforts, and we've used. These are some of the funding sources. Community development block grants have been extremely useful. It's a wonderful program that actually has less bureaucratic red tape than some of the others that we deal with, and it's 100% federal funding. We've done a lot of work around the Empire Umpire Elementary School. Did work on Washington Street from Carson Street over the Aquatic Center, and also on Long Street, where sidewalks didn't previously exist. We've used Safe Routes to School funds for actually the path that's shown in this picture. This is off of Hell's Bells by Eagle Valley Middle School, connects two neighborhoods together. And also we've done 9 radar signs around the city, all near schools, which have been very well received. Yes, sir.
This is probably off point, but that area there was blocked off with yellow tape and cones right after the rains. Was it flooded out, or do you have?
I don't personally know. There is a low flow.
Yeah. It was. It flooded out, and quite a bit of debris washed over the road. So we were in the process of cleaning that up. I believe it's done now.
It's open.
Yeah.
Yeah. We actually have other facilities. For example, I went down the linear path that goes underneath the freeway there by the Fifth Street Bridge. And the reason why we have gates on either of those is that you have the ability to close those, because I purposely went down there just with my wife and dog to see what it looked like, and the water was within a few inches of the path, but wasn't even need to close that one. Other improvements, we've used transportation enhancement funds. This is about 4 or 5 years ago. We used it as part of the funding mix on Hot Springs Road, which used to have quite a different look to it. We've used it on East 5th Street from Fairview Drive to Carson River Road for a path and bike lanes. Gonai Road also for bike lanes. Forgot to change that word. Roop Street, it says underway, but now we're finished. I guess the contract isn't closed yet. But the Roop Street project has now been completed. We've had Rec Trails money, which is also federal federal funds, actually acquired by our Parks and Rec Department, which was used for a path near the corporate yard, and also other projects that whenever we've built any of these streets, North Stewart Street, Roop Street, Curry, Fairview, we've gotten bike and or pedestrian improvements with it, and also with water main projects. This picture shows a path along Fairview that that was installed as part of that water main that went in last year. Current needs going forward, right now we only have about $50,000 in the street fund budgeted for sidewalk maintenance projects. These are things like removing and replacing sidewalks that have heaved due to the roots, for example. This is significantly below our estimated need of about $265,000 per year for just the maintenance of our existing facilities. There is still a substantial ADA-related need for improvements. All these projects that we've talked about have incorporated ADA requirements as we move forward, and those improvements are made as part of road projects and as part of bike projects and transit projects, but there's still a big need. And one thing I want to point out was that there is a range there because it's not just a lot of people focus on the curb ramps that are missing or are outdated, but there are a lot of issues, whether they be obstacles. Sometimes we have utility poles that are located in the sidewalks, for example. So there are numerous things that are needed to be addressed. I just listed some of the programs that we use here. We've talked about these, the FTA money, CDBG, and now there's a new program called Transportation Alternatives that I hope to have you hear about by securing some of those funds in the future as we move forward. We have made efforts to specifically target neighborhoods. One thing that is listed on here, where the money is available to use. Some of these funds can only be used in certain areas, whether it be low income or near a transit route, but we try to aim for target population, transit-dependent areas, near schools where you obviously have children walking, we have older neighborhoods that are deteriorated, and obviously gaps in connectivity like the Roop Street project that we just completed. Moving forward, these projects are all...
Patrick, yes, forgive me for interrupting. At the last board meeting, we had a gentleman make some comments at the mic under redevelopment when we were talking about how to dispose of what little money we have left in the redevelopment fund to help catalyze, in this case, the replacement of the sign, the community center sign. And I believe he lives on Long Street, wasn't it? Was it Long? No, it wasn't Long. It was South. No, I'm trying to remember what Colorado. I think it was Colorado. Anyway,
it was over by the old armory.
Yeah, he gave his card to Lee Plemmel, but it's probably more appropriate for RTC to consider his request. I mean, Larry responded by saying that, you know, we have a limited amount of funding, as you point out, some of it's restricted. But obviously another need is to address some of the, you know, the discontinuity in our sidewalks around town. And I would think that that would also be important to me in terms of meeting ADA requirements. Anyway, if you could follow through with me.
Yeah, I'll follow up. I think I know what spot you're talking about. But No. Absolutely. Thank you. These projects that are before you here are we list them as programmed. These are funded projects. We have community development block grant funds available to us now to do more work on Long Street by the Health and Human Services Building. Transportation enhancement funds, some of the ones that are left over now, the program has been discontinued, to install bike lanes and sidewalk on East 5th Street from Solomon over to the freeway. Safe Route to School money to put sidewalks in on Hells Bells. Right now there are no sidewalks along Hells Bells from 5th Street north to that other path that we built. We're doing some work on Silver Sage Drive right now, actually, using Federal Transit Administration funds. That is a bus route. And then we also have some miscellaneous sidewalk work going on with those street funds that are available to us actually right now over on Thompson Street. Other projects moving forward, we're still, for lack of a better word, in a little bit of limbo on the freeing up of the funding for the William Street path that NDOT indicated they would be funding on the south side of William Street as a reconstruction of existing path. We have some other pending utility projects that have the potential to improve bicycle and pedestrian projects as well. We've done some planning work for the extension of the freeway path, and actually Dan, and which was used for a path near the corporate yard, and also other projects that whenever we've built any of these streets, North Stewart Street, Roop Street, Curry, Fairview, we've gotten bike and or pedestrian improvements with it, and also with water main projects. This picture shows a path along Fairview that that was installed as part of that water main that went in last year. Current needs going forward, right now we only have about $50,000 in the street fund budgeted for sidewalk maintenance projects. These are things like removing and replacing sidewalks that have heaved due to the roots, for example. This is significantly below our estimated need of about $265,000 per year for just the maintenance of our existing facilities. There is still a substantial ADA-related need for improvements. All these projects that we've talked about have incorporated ADA requirements as we move forward, and those improvements are made as part of road projects and as part of bike projects and transit projects, but there's still a big need. And one thing I want to point out was there is a range there because it's not just a lot of people focus on the curb ramps that are missing or are outdated, but there are a lot of issues, whether they be obstacles. Sometimes we have utility poles that are located in the sidewalks, for example. So there are numerous things that are needed to be addressed. I just listed some of the programs that we use here. We've talked about these, the FTA money, CDBG, and now there's a new program called Transportation Alternatives that I hope to have you hear about by securing some of those funds in the future as we move forward. We have made efforts to specifically target neighborhoods. One thing that isn't listed on here, where the money is available to use. Some of these funds can only be used in certain areas, whether it be low income or near a transit route, but we try to aim for target population, transit-dependent areas, near schools where you obviously have children walking, we have older neighborhoods that are deteriorated, and obviously gaps in connectivity like the Roop Street project that we just completed. Moving forward, these projects are all...
Patrick, yes, forgive me for interrupting. At the last board meeting, we had a gentleman make some comments at the mic under redevelopment when we were talking about how to dispose of what little money we have left in the redevelopment fund to help catalyze, in this case, the replacement of the sign, the community center sign. And I believe he lives on Long Street, wasn't it? Was it Long? No, it wasn't Long. It was South. No, I'm trying to remember what Colorado. I think it was Colorado. Anyway,
it was over by the old armory.
Yeah, he gave his card to Lee Plemmel, but it's probably more appropriate for RTC to consider his request. I mean, Larry responded by saying that, you know, we have a limited amount of funding, as you point out, some of it's restricted. But obviously, another need is to address some of the, you know, the discontinuity in our sidewalks around town. And I would think that that would also be important to me in terms of meeting ADA requirements. Anyway, if you could follow through.
I'll follow up. I think I know what spot you're talking about. But no, absolutely. Thank you. These projects that are before you here are we list them as programmed. These are funded projects. We have community development block grant funds available to us now to do more work on Long Street by the Health and Human Services Building. Transportation enhancement funds, some of the ones that are left over now the program has been discontinued, to install bike lanes and sidewalk on East 5th Street from Solomon over to the freeway. Safe Route to School money to put sidewalks in on Hells Bells. Right now there are no sidewalks along Hells Bells from 5th Street north to that other path that we built. We're doing some work on Silver Sage Drive right now, actually, using Federal Transit Administration funds. That is a bus route. And then we also have some miscellaneous sidewalk work going on with those street funds that are available to us actually right now over on Thompson Street. Other projects moving forward, we're still, for lack of a better word, in a little bit of limbo on the freeing up of the funding for the William Street path that NDOT indicated they would be funding on the south side of William Street as a reconstruction of existing path. We have some other pending utility projects that will that have the potential to improve bicycle and pedestrian projects as well. We've done some planning work for the extension of the freeway path, and actually Dan and Vern and Jeff have been working with some of the property owners to look at future easements so that, that when we can fund the project, we'll have a place to put that path. Improvements along Kings Canyon, because I'm in front of this body, I'll tell you that we did meet with Sean Lehman. Rob Fellows and I met with Sean Lehman out in the field, as we say, and looking into some shouldering and signage options out there. So we'll be moving forward with some interim options, just so you're aware. We're in agreement there, and we just have to agree on exactly where to put the signs, and then we'll move forward. But we'd still like to pursue the ultimate configuration. We'd also like to pursue improvements on Curry Street north of Rhodes, where there's that curve and the road needs to be reconstructed anyway, and also additional ADA-related improvements. One thing I'll just want to mention really quickly, what we've come to figure out is that while you can't, all these funds, most of them need some sort of a match, some don't. We do have significant available Federal Transit Administration funds, so we've been using them as best we can to use them for sidewalks. It's an 80-20 program. We've learned that while you can't use transportation money to match transportation money, CDBG comes from the Department of Housing and Urban Development. So we're going to be able to use Housing and Urban Development money, which is 100%, to match the Federal Transit Administration money, which is 80%, and it's going to stretch our dollars quite a bit further. So more on that later, but not today, though. Moving on to the street system, Carson City Freeway, Phases 1A and 1B, opened up to Highway 50 in 2006, early 2006. 2A opened up to Fairview Drive at its current configuration in September of 2009. And as you are all aware, the Nevada Department of Transportation has broken the remainder into multiple phases. Phase 2B-1 was recently completed. 2B-2, I realized this morning they were supposed to award it, and I haven't gotten confirmation that they have yet. But the State Transportation Board was supposed to award that this morning so they can get to work. And the project manager said that they've removed any winter restrictions. So they didn't award it just to sit around for 4 months and wait for the weather to get better. Still pending are phases 2B-3 and 2B-4, which you've already heard from the assistant director just a month or two ago about their plans of moving forward. The Carson City Freeway Agreement, we have an agreement between Carson City and the Nevada Department of Transportation, which dates back originally to 1997 and has been amended three times since. The agreement originally included the levy of a 5-cent sales tax to be collected and given to NDOT to fund a total of $19 million plus interest for Phase 1. Amendment 1 was passed in 2004, which suspended that payment for 3 years to allow us to construct Fairview Drive, which, of course, we did. Finished it in 2008. We agreed to fund that through that fuel tax, but it's only through 3 cents of a fuel tax. So we're still collecting the 5-cent fuel tax, but only 3 of it was going to the Nevada Department of Transportation at that time. Outside of that amendment process in 2004, the Board of Supervisors voted to remove the sunset on the 5 cents that was being collected. So at the time, there was 5 cents being collected, 3 cents going to the Nevada Department of Transportation. In 2007, Amendment 2 was passed, which deferred that 3-cent payment to 2009, and the city agreed to take numerous roads from to have them relinquished to the city in lieu of remaining payments for Phase 1, which is $4.8 million. So there was a financial benefit to the city, relieving us from that obligation, but also the cost of operating and maintaining those roads. In 2009, the third and, at the moment, final agreement was passed, which extended that even further. We had more roads relinquished to the city, further reduction in the remaining in the remaining payments to NDOT. And where we stand right now with this agreement is that once, under the current agreement, once the freeway is completed and open to traffic, a 3-cent payment would resume. Vern and Jeff have been working with on the property owners to look at future easements so that, that when we can fund the project, we'll have a place to put that path. Improvements along Kings Canyon, because I'm in front of this body, I'll tell you that we did meet with Sean Lehman. Rob Fellows and I met with Sean Lehman out in the field, as we say, and looking into some shouldering and signage options out there. So we'll be moving forward with some interim options, just so you're aware. We're in agreement there, and we just have to agree on exactly where to put the signs, and then we'll move forward. But we'd still like to pursue the ultimate configuration. We'd also like to pursue improvements on Curry Street north of Rhodes, where there's that curve and the road needs to be reconstructed anyway, and also additional ADA-related improvements. One thing I'll just want to mention really quickly, what we've come to figure out is that while you can't, all these funds, most of them need some sort of a match, some don't. We do have significant available Federal Transit Administration funds, so we've been using them as best we can to use them for sidewalks. It's an 80-20 program. We've learned that while you can't use transportation money to match transportation money, CDBG comes from the Department of Housing and Urban Development. So we're going to be able to use Housing and Urban Development money, which is 100%, to match the Federal Transit Administration money, which is 80%, and it's going to stretch our dollars quite a bit further. So more on that later, but not today, though. Moving on to the street system, Carson City Freeway, phases 1A and 1B, opened up to Highway 50 in 2006, early 2006. 2A opened up to Fairview Drive as current configuration in September of 2009. And as you are all aware, the Nevada Department of Transportation has broken the remainder into multiple phases. Phase 2B-1 was recently completed. 2B-2, I realized this morning they were supposed to award it, and I haven't gotten confirmation that they have yet. But the State Transportation Board was supposed to award that this morning so they can get to work. And the project manager said that they've removed any winter restrictions. So they didn't award it just to sit around for 4 months and wait for the weather to get better. Still pending are phases 2B-3 and 2B-4, which you've already heard from the assistant director just a month or two ago about their plans of moving forward. The Carson City Freeway Agreement, we have an agreement between Carson City and the Nevada Department of Transportation, which dates back originally to 1997 and has been amended 3 times since. The agreement originally included the levy of a 5-cent sales tax to be collected and given to NDOT to fund a total of $19 million plus interest for Phase 1. Amendment 1 was passed in 2004, which suspended that payment for 3 years to allow us to construct Fairview Drive, which, of course, we did. Finished it in 2008. We agreed to fund that through that fuel tax, but it's only through 3 cents of a fuel tax. So we're still collecting the 5-cent fuel tax, but only 3 of it was going to the Nevada Department of Transportation at that time. Outside of that amendment process in 2004, the Board of Supervisors voted to remove the sunset on the 5 cents that was being collected. So at the time, there was 5 cents being collected, 3 cents going to the Nevada Department of Transportation. In 2007, Amendment 2 was passed, which deferred that 3-cent payment to 2009, and the city agreed to take numerous roads from to have them relinquished to the city in lieu of remaining payments for Phase 1, which is $4.8 million. So there was a financial benefit to the city relieving us from that obligation, but also the cost of operating and maintaining those roads. In 2009, the third and, at the moment, final agreement was passed, which extended that even further. We had more roads relinquished to the city, further reduction in the remaining payments to NDOT. And where we stand right now with this agreement is that once, under the current agreement, once the freeway is completed and open to traffic, a 3-cent payment would resume for the remaining $7.2 million. Looking in the future, with some beautiful artwork on the right there, which might look familiar to some of us, of course, we're going to work with the Nevada Department of Transportation, we as staff, and of course, you as the RTC and our elected officials, to complete the freeway. We will continue to work with the Nevada Department of Transportation during the projects, including the pursuit of aesthetic treatments on the stormwater basin in South Carson City, which NDOT has assured us, since the assistant director of NDOT was here recently, that they are looking into once again with the appropriate staff. And finally, we will work with NDOT on a potential future amendment which could address that remaining $7.2 million obligation, as the city obviously is still operating with this freeway that ends at Fairview for an extended period of time. Moving on to the pavement management system, and this is probably where we're going to move into things that are more familiar to you, so I'm going to go a little bit faster, but feel free to stop me. Frankly, there are going to be some slides that haven't changed at all since I showed it to you. We develop a pavement management system that determines the overall condition index of the roadways. We've divided into arterial and collectors into one group, which have more traffic, and into local roads, which are mostly to serve residential neighborhoods. This we did update because things change. We did update the system. We constantly update it. For example, when we paved Carson Street, we updated that. When we do crack filling, we rebuilt a small section of Airport Road. So the current average condition index is 69.3, but as you can see on this slide, the arterials and collectors are in better condition, which is appropriate because they have higher traffic volumes. But our goal would be to have them at a higher level than these, than what they are now, because they are showing wear. And some are, while that may be an average, some are significantly lower than that average. This map should look familiar to you. This is where our roads are deemed acceptable, excellent, and poor. Red showing in poor. As we've mentioned before, this is the pavement management system. Takes into account a lot of the different variables, including different road conditions and, as well, different types of maintenance activities. We do update the history. We make sure we coordinate activities. That actually has two meanings, coordinating activities, not only between, for example, we wouldn't go and fill the cracks on a road and then the next month reconstruct it, but also coordinating the activities with utilities as well, because as you're all aware, when we go and do significant work, we make sure we include an evaluation of the utilities to make sure that once we rebuild the road, we're not ripping it apart the next year for a major utility line. We have two major ways to run our analyses. Basically, if you have X number of dollars, what kind of condition do you expect to have your road, or if you want to maintain it at a certain level, how much will it cost you? This shows the concept of the Baker curve shows the concept of what happens to a pavement as it deteriorates. And of course, the concept is that you want to make sure you maintain your pavements to keep them at a serviceable level and extend the life. The maintenance of the current system is very important to keep it up, keep it usable. Sometimes people call the damage to your vehicle when you roll over a pothole a hidden tax, because while you may not have paid the tax man, instead you're paying for car repairs. We like to maintain the roads. The estimated cost is total to maintain at the current level is over $2 million a year, but our average spending on an annual basis is closer to $900,000. And the longer that continues, the more you can expect the roads to, on average, continue to deteriorate, of course, at not exactly the same pace, but they will continue to deteriorate and therefore increase your cost to return it to a desirable level or even the current level. We're going to talk about what maintenance activities we've been doing. We're not going to go over these in detail, but you can see this shows over the period 1999 to 2007, the roads that did receive some of the remaining $7.2 million. Looking in the future, with some beautiful artwork on the right there, which might look familiar to some of us. Of course, we're going to work with the Nevada Department of Transportation, we as staff, and of course, you as the RTC and our elected officials, to complete the freeway. We will continue to work with the Nevada Department of Transportation during the projects, including the pursuit of aesthetic treatments on the stormwater basin in South Carson City, which NDOT has assured us since the assistant director of NDOT was here recently that they are looking into once again with the appropriate staff. And finally, we will work with NDOT on a potential future amendment which could address that remaining $7.2 million obligation as the city obviously is still operating with this freeway that ends at Fairview for an extended period of time. Moving on to the pavement management system, and this is probably where we're going to move into things that are more familiar to you, so I'm going to go a little bit faster, but feel free to stop me. Frankly, there are going to be some slides that haven't changed at all since I showed it to you. We develop a pavement management system that determines the overall condition index of the roadways. We've divided into arterial and collectors into one group, which have more traffic, and into the local roads, which are mostly to serve residential neighborhoods. This we did update because things change. We did update the system. We constantly update it. For example, when we paved Carson Street, we updated that. When we do crack filling, we rebuilt a small section of Airport Road. So the current average condition index is 69.3, but as you can see on this slide, the arterials and collectors are in better condition, which is appropriate because they have higher traffic volumes. But our goal would be to have them at a higher level than these than what they are now, because they are showing wear, and some are, while that may be an average, some are significantly lower than that average. This map should look familiar to you. This is where our roads are deemed acceptable, excellent, and poor. Red showing and poor. As we've mentioned before, this is the pavement management system. Takes into account a lot of the different variables, including different road conditions and, as well, different types of maintenance activities. We do update the history. We make sure we coordinate activities. That actually has two meanings, coordinating activities, not only between, for example, we wouldn't go and fill the cracks on a road and then the next month reconstruct it, but also coordinating the activities with utilities as well, because as you're all aware, when we go and do significant work, we make sure we include an evaluation of the utilities to make sure that once we rebuild the road, we're not ripping it apart the next year for a major utility line. We have two major ways to run our analyses. Basically, if you have X number of dollars, what kind of condition do you expect to have your road, or if you want to maintain it at a certain level, how much will it cost you? This shows the concept of the Baker curve shows the concept of what happens to a pavement as it deteriorates, and of course the concept is that you want to make sure you maintain your pavements to keep them at a serviceable level and extend the life. The maintenance of the current system is very important to keep it up, keep it usable. Sometimes people call the damage to your vehicle when you roll over a pothole a hidden tax, because while you may not have paid the tax man, instead you're paying for car repairs. We like to maintain the roads. The estimated cost is total to maintain at the current level is over $2 million a year, but our average spending on an annual basis is closer to $900,000. And the longer that continues, the more you can expect the roads to, on average, continue to deteriorate, of course, at not exactly the same pace, but they will continue to deteriorate and therefore increase your cost to return it to a desirable level or even the current level. We're going to talk about what maintenance activities we've been doing. We're not going to go over these in detail, but you can see this shows over the period 1999 to 2007, the roads that did receive some sort of treatment, things like slurry seals and crack filling. 2008 through 2011, you can see that we did move to a program where we'll show a map of the wall where you do certain areas of the town. I will note that you can see that for example, Edmonds and Coons, Fairview College, Arrowhead, and part of Silver Sage are all show up in a brown. That was the year, the one time we did get a little bit of stimulus money that we were able to actually use for a road. So we did do those. This actually shows the map of our current program of an 8-year cycle of doing a crack fill and slurry seal in each of these areas. You can see that that red area is kind of down by Cedar Elementary is the furthest one out because that was the most recently done, whereas that yellow area on the west side is the one that is scheduled next to come in the cycle. Some of the significant projects that were undertaken, Roop Street Phase 1, which was Winnie down to Beverly approximately, Curry Street Phase 1, Curry Street Phase 1 and Phase 2, that's good. Fairview Drive, of course, was a very, very substantial project done in advance of the freeway terminating in Fairview. Hot Springs Road, mentioned earlier, that included both street improvements and bicycle and pedestrian improvements. The extension of North Stewart Street, another major accomplishment. New traffic signals installed at Eagle Station, Carson Street, Roop Street Phase 2, most recently. And then other improvements that were all those streets listed, Conti, Bigelow, Snyder, Robinson, and Buddeye had major street work done, benefited from utility projects. And I want to note that there was a period where we did a lot of very significant projects, and that was good timing because we had a very competitive bidding process. We had a lot of bids that were underestimate. We had reduced traffic levels, unfortunately, because of the economy, but that did mean we were affecting fewer folks. We were consistent with our regional transportation plan. We've had attractive bonding terms, which we've even been able to refund sometimes, and we did put people to work, as was the intent, as of the stimulus project as well. Revenues. You've also seen these slides. The RTC is funded through the gas tax. The motor fuel tax street fund is funded through a combination of the motor fuel tax and a sales tax. We've now completed the fiscal year 2012, so we now do have year-end totals compared to the last time you've seen this. It might have been a partial year last time. But you can see that the general trend from 2007 to 2012 is a downward trend in the number of gallons sold. 15% decrease, in fact. A lot of multiple factors. Of course, there was a recession with reduced construction. Traffic volumes are down at many of the count stations in the city. There are more fuel-efficient vehicles, and, of course, fuel prices have varied. Luckily, at the moment, they're a little less than they were before, but generally speaking, they have been increased than over historic levels. The revenues here, once again, we have a whole year now for 2012, which is good to have. An important thing to point out is that the RTC, which is shown in the white, right? Yes, I'll make sure I should look at the screen instead of there. The RTC, which is shown in the white, tracks the gallonage because obviously the money only comes from the motor fuel tax. The blue, which shows the streets, shows the impact of the sales tax. During 2006-07, there was a much greater funds for the streets fund. What you can see in between, for example, 2011-2012 is that the total amount of revenue that came into the streets fund was almost level, whereas the RTC fund actually decreased because the sales tax increase that has been experienced was benefiting the streets fund. But overall, generally speaking, obviously the revenues are decreased from the peak of 2006-07. We'll note that indeed that our grant in 2010 was the only one that was actually used to preserve pavements. We have had, as previously discussed, a lot of grants that we are very happy to have received and we've benefited from. However, they don't address the major treatment, things like slurry seals and crack filling. 2008 through 2011, you can see that we did move to a program where we'll show a map of the wall where you do certain areas of the town. I will note that you can see that for example, Edmonds and Koontz, Fairview College, Arrowhead, and part of Silver Sage are all show up in a brown. That was the year, the one time we did get a little bit of stimulus money that we were able to actually use for a road. So we did do those. This actually shows the map of our current program of an 8-year cycle of doing a crack fill and slurry seal in each of these areas. You can see that that red area is kind of down by Cedar Elementary is the furthest one out because that was the most recently done, whereas that yellow area on the west side is the one that is scheduled next to come in the cycle. Some of the significant projects that were undertaken, Roop Street Phase 1, which was Winnie down to Beverly approximately, Curry Street Phase 1, Curry Street Phase 1 and Phase 2, that's good. Fairview Drive, of course, was a very, very substantial project done in advance of the freeway terminating in Fairview. Hot Springs Road, mentioned earlier, that included both street improvements and bicycle and pedestrian improvements. The extension of North Stewart Street, another major accomplishment. New traffic signal installed at Eagle Station and Carson Street. Roop Street Phase 2, most recently. And then other improvements that were all those streets listed, Conti, Bigelow, Snyder, Robinson, and Buddeye, had major street work done, benefited from utility projects. And I want to note that there was a period recently where we did a lot of very significant projects, and that was good timing because we had a very competitive bidding process. We had a lot of bids that were underestimate. We had reduced traffic levels, unfortunately, because of the economy, but that did mean we were affecting fewer folks. We were consistent with our regional transportation plan. We've had attractive bonding terms, which we've been able to refund sometimes, and we did put people to work, as was the intent, as of the stimulus project as well. Revenues. You've also seen these slides. The RTC is funded through the gas tax. The motor fuel tax street fund is funded through a combination of the motor fuel tax and a sales tax. We've now completed the fiscal year 2012, so we now do have year-end totals compared to the last time you've seen this. It might have been a partial year last time. But you can see that the general trend from 2007 to 2012 is a downward trend in the number of gallons sold. 15% decrease, in fact. A lot of multiple factors. Of course, there was a recession with reduced construction. Traffic volumes are down at many of the count stations in the city. There are more fuel-efficient vehicles, and, of course, fuel prices they have varied. Luckily, at the moment, they're a little less than they were before, but generally speaking, they have been increased than over historic levels. The revenues here, once again, we have a whole year now for 2012, which is good to have. An important thing to point out is that the RTC, which is shown in the white, right? Yes, I'll make sure I should look at the screen instead of there. The RTC, which is shown in the white, tracks the gallonage because obviously the money only comes from the motor fuel tax. The blue, which shows the streets, shows the impact of the sales tax. During 2006-07, there was a much, much greater funds for the streets fund. What you can see in between, for example, 2011-2012 is that the total amount of revenue that came into the streets fund was almost level, whereas the RTC fund actually decreased because the sales tax increase that has been experienced was benefiting the streets fund. But overall, generally speaking, obviously the revenues are decreased from the peak of 2006-07. We'll note that indeed that ARRA grant in 2010 was the only one that was actually used to preserve pavements. We have had, as previously discussed, a lot of grants that we are very happy to have received and we've benefited from. However, they don't address the maintenance of the base asset, which is the pavements. The total annual cost for all bonds outstanding with the RTC is about $1.7 million. Those first two are a little confusing, but what you need to know is that we did refund part of a bond, which was a cost savings, which is a good thing. It just makes it a little confusing. When we say in that first bullet that something's expiring in 2015 to the tune of $285,000, the next bullet increases by a similar amount at the same time. So the bottom line is that we do not we will not realize any savings of any significance until 2024, when we will save $425,000 a year, and then the real substantial savings come in 2028 and 2030. This you've also seen before, the same information about Washoe County. When you're looking at revenue options, Washoe County was looking at some of these same types of information, of course, on a different scale. They went to the voters once, got a gas tax index by the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, went back to the voters several years ago, got an increase based on the Producer Price Index, which is a much greater increase, which you'll see on the following chart. You can see that in the early 2000s, the revenue did increase slowly with the Consumer Price Index indexing, but in the last couple of years, we haven't gotten to 2012 yet, but as you can see, once they implemented that Producer Price Index, there were dramatic increases in the revenues to the Washoe RTC, which you can see on the ground in a lot of the work they've accomplished. We've looked at what would happen if a Consumer Price Indexing or producer price indexing were implemented in Carson City. The difference for the RTC for the consumer price indexing would be about $134,000 a year based on last year's revenue. The producer price index would be just over $1 million. If there was a desire to implement either of these, it would take a vote of the people. In addition, to implement the producer price index, just as Washoe County had to do, they would need a change in state law to allow a county of this size to implement this change. Obviously, a nearby example, as previously mentioned, was Washoe County that just went through this process. This graphically shows, from left to right, the 2012 RTC motor fuel tax revenue as it was in reality. And the center bar shows what it would have been with the consumer price index, the modest increase, and the producer price index, which was a more significant increase if it would have been implemented for comparison purposes. Another option, as has been presented to this board, is to have implementation of a government services tax, which is a tax on the value of your vehicles, added to annual registration. It varies with the value of the vehicle. It would average about $21 per vehicle, and it would be expected, if implemented, to increase, would provide a new revenue stream of just under $1.2 million a year. Additionally, another option, and I will point out, because this board has seen much of this before, this is a new slide, it's been determined under state law the city can levy up to a quarter cent sales tax to fund infrastructure. A 1/8 cent tax, so half of what is available, has already been levied to support the V&T. That other 1/8 of a cent could potentially be levied by the Board of Supervisors and be directed to street maintenance activities. Per Nick Providenti, our finance director, he estimates that the value of an 1/8 cent sales tax at this time is about $950,000 per year. And that completes my presentation.
Thank you, Patrick. I think that RTC might be competing with the another branch of the Public Works Department, namely in in connection with the sewer treatment plant. So that's going to be a very coveted source of funding. But that was a great presentation. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments by members of the commission on the presentation? So it can be further refined before it goes to the board. John?
Has there been any activity towards getting of the base asset, which is the pavements? The total annual cost for all bonds outstanding with the RTC is about $1.7 million. Those first two are a little confusing, but what you need to know is that we did refund part of a bond, which was a cost savings, which is a good thing. It just makes it a little confusing. When we say in that first bullet that something's expiring in 2015 to the tune of $285,000, the next bullet increases by a similar amount at the same time. So the bottom line is that we do not, we will not realize any savings of any significance until 2024, when we will save $425,000 a year, and then the real substantial savings come in 2028 and 2030. This you've also seen before, the same information about Washoe County. When you're looking at revenue options, Washoe County was looking at some of these same types of information, of course, on a different scale. They went to the voters once, got a gas tax index by the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, went back to the voters several years ago, got an increase based on the Producer Price Index, which is a much greater increase, which you'll see on the following chart. You can see that in the early 2000s, the revenue did increase slowly with the Consumer Price Index indexing, but in the last couple of years, we haven't gotten to 2012 yet, but as you can see, once they implemented that Producer Price Index, there were dramatic increases in the revenues to the Washoe RTC, which you can see on the ground in a lot of the work they've accomplished. We've looked at what would happen if a Consumer Price Indexing or Producer Price Indexing were implemented in Carson City. The difference for the RTC for the Consumer Price Indexing would be about $134,000 a year based on last year's revenue. The Producer Price Index would be just over $1 million. If there was a desire to implement either of these, it would take a vote of the people. In addition, to implement the Producer Price Index, just as Washoe County had to do, they would need a change in state law to allow a county of this size to implement this change. Obviously, a nearby example, as previously mentioned, was Washoe County that just went through this process. This graphically shows, from left to right, the 2012 RTC motor fuel tax revenue as it was in reality. And the center bar shows what it would have been with the Consumer Price Index, the modest increase, and the Producer Price Index, which was a more significant increase if it would have been implemented for comparison purposes. Another option, as has been presented to this board, is to have implementation of a government services tax, which is a tax on the value of your vehicles, added to annual registration. It varies with the value of the vehicle. It would average about $21 per vehicle, and it would be expected, if implemented, to increase, would provide a new revenue stream of just under $1.2 million a year. Additionally, another option, and I will point out, because this board has seen much of this before, this is a new slide, it's been determined under state law the city can levy up to a quarter cent sales tax to fund infrastructure. A 1/8 cent tax, so half of what is available, has already been levied to support the V&T. That other 1/8 of a cent could potentially be levied by the Board of Supervisors and be directed to street maintenance activities. Per Nick Providenti, our finance director, he estimates that the value of an 1/8 cent sales tax at this time is about $950,000 per year. And that completes my presentation.
Thank you, Patrick. I think that RTC might be competing with the another branch of the Public Works Department, namely in connection with the sewer treatment plant. So that's going to be a very coveted source of funding. But that was a great presentation. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments by members of the commission on the presentation? So it can be further refined before it goes to the board. John?
Has there been any activity towards getting the law changed for the PPI type of imposition? Or is there anything my real question is anything happening so that we get bill drafts or whatever we need to do at this session?
No, there are no bill drafts pending at this time at the state level. There are some interest in this as well in other counties, the big one, the South called Clark. But there's nothing pending at the state level or by us.
And it's my understanding the federal government is also looking at gas tax increases as a way of dealing with a portion of the deficit. I mean, I don't know. No tax is necessarily palatable. I would think that the government service tax on the registration of automobiles might be a better approach, but maybe fewer people competing for the same revenue. The only other thing I wanted to mention, Patrick, I think obviously RTC for a short period of time was very much involved in fielding concerns and regarding speeding on our streets, and we do have a temporary speed control measures. We have migrating radar signs. We have at least one speed bump that is mobile, although it's become extremely stationary at the moment. So I don't know if you want to add that to the presentation. And then it might be useful, actually, for any of the viewing public to dissect the total taxes on gas. You know, 9 cents comes to Carson City, but what the state taxes are, what the federal taxes are, so they realize what portion each government entity receives.
Right. No, absolutely. We can get that. I was just looking at a chart of what how much each state levies, and it varies dramatically. So.
If we're adding possible things, what I'd like to see is you showed the graph that showed how improvement causes the deterioration of roads to cease or gives you a longer period of time. I get the impression that we're heading towards a disaster and it's going to take a period of time. What is that period of time? You know, what can we do to forestall it other than, you know, I don't know that the connection is made. You increase the revenue coming into streets, the streets last longer. 1 year, 10 years, 50 years, that sort of thing. If we maintain them now versus have to replace them all in 10 years, have to replace them all in 50 years, that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah, we can. Certainly see what can be quantified, but just as far as the presentation, and we've done some sensitivity analysis. Basically, when you look at that overall condition index, we can run the analysis and say, what happens if you spend no money? How fast does it go down? And the general answer is that, and we can do a little more looking to see if we can figure it out, is when does it go off of that cliff? It's a large asset. It doesn't deteriorate overnight. But the rate of deterioration will increase the further you let it go, and it's analogous to, you know, turning a big ship. It's not easy to improve it. It does take investment to improve it, and it does go down slowly. But then the deterioration will accelerate. So
we could spend more time, I think, just explaining that slide and, you know, timing and processes.
Yeah. Sharpening what I was just trying to say.
And it will be worth your time because I think as the economy improves, when it starts improving, but in the next 3 to 5 years, it should start improving and there will be revenue available and there will be decisions made as to how to spend that revenue. And I'm worried about people are going to go, we need to do this grand project and that grand project and forget about the basics, which is going to be water, sewer, and streets. And so I don't want you guys to be forgotten about it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, maybe, John, what can be done is you can have a priority allocation. In other words, I agree with John. I mean, it's more important to maintain what we have than to expand you know, the road system. And so, you know, maybe we need to establish or at least sensitize people to the fact that there is a hierarchy in terms of where that money is going to be expended if it becomes available in the future. Jim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Patrick, I think I followed you pretty good throughout the entire presentation, and maybe a picture, a PowerPoint picture of us standing by the sign or the signs. I don't think I saw that.
The law changed for the PPI type of imposition, or is there anything my real question is anything happening so that we get bill drafts or whatever we need to do at this session?
No, there are no bill drafts pending at this time. At the state level, there are some interest in this as well, in other counties, the big one, the South called Clark, but there's nothing pending at the state level or by us.
And it's my understanding the federal government is also looking at gas tax increases as a way of dealing with a portion of the deficit. I mean, I don't know. No tax is necessarily palatable. I would think that the government service tax on the registration of automobiles might be a better approach, but maybe fewer people competing for the same revenue. The only other thing I wanted to mention, Patrick, I think obviously RTC for a short period of time was very much involved in fielding concerns and regarding speeding on our streets, and we do have a temporary speed control measures. We have migrating radar signs. We have at least one speed bump that is mobile, although it's become extremely stationary at the moment. So I don't know if you want to add that to the presentation. And then it might be useful, actually, for any of the viewing public to dissect the total taxes on gas. You know, 9 cents comes to Carson City, but what the state taxes are, what the federal taxes are, so they realize what portion each government entity receives.
Right. No, absolutely. We can get that. I was just looking at a chart of how much each state levies, and it varies dramatically. So.
Right.
John. If we're adding possible things, what I'd like to see is you showed the graph that showed how improvement causes the deterioration of roads to cease or gives you a longer period of time. I get the impression that we're heading towards a disaster and it's going to take a period of time. What is that period of time? You know, what can we do to forestall it other than, you know, I don't know that the connection is made. You increase the revenue coming into streets, the streets last longer. 1 year, 10 years, 50 years, that sort of thing. If we maintain them now versus have to replace them all in 10 years, have to replace them all in 50 years, that sort of thing.
Right. We can certainly see what can be quantified, but just as far as the presentation, and we've done some sensitivity analysis. Basically, when you look at that overall condition index, we can run the analysis and say, what happens if you spend no money? How fast does it go down? And the general answer is that, and we can do a little more looking to see if we can figure it out, is when does it go off of that cliff? It's a large asset. It doesn't deteriorate overnight, but the rate of deterioration will increase the further you let it go. And it's analogous to, you know, turning a big ship. It's not easy to improve it. It does take investment to improve it, and it does go down slowly, but then the deterioration will accelerate. So
we could spend more time, I think, just explaining that slide and, you know, timing and processes.
Sharpening what I was just trying to say.
And it will be worth your time, because I think as the economy improves, when it starts improving, but in the next 3 to 5 years, it should start improving, and there will be revenue available, and there will be decisions made as to how to spend that revenue. And I'm worried about people are going to go, we need to do this grand project and that grand project, and forget about the basics, which is going to be water, sewer, and streets. And so I don't want you guys to be forgotten about it.
Thank you very much.
Maybe, John, what can be done is you can have a priority allocation. In other words, I agree with John. I mean, it's more important to maintain what we have than to expand, you know, the road system. And so, you know, maybe we need to establish or at least sensitize people to the fact that there is a hierarchy in terms of where that money is going to be expended if it becomes available in the future. Jim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Patrick, I think I followed you pretty good throughout the entire presentation, and maybe a picture, a PowerPoint picture of us standing by the sign or the signs. I don't think I saw that. A little discussion perhaps on freeway landscaping, because we did spend quite a few meetings having some part or some of those meetings discussing freeway landscaping. And I would make a little more emphasis on that one chart where you showed that the revenue had been declining since 2007, and in the last 2 years it's leveled off. That's actually good. It's not an increase, but it's not declining anymore. And perhaps a little more emphasis on, while it's not increasing, it's certainly not decreasing, and that's a good thing.
Thank you, Jim.
Any other comments?
No requests for additional information? Okay. Well, I think it's a very comprehensive report. Patrick, thank you very much. And to Darren, whoever assisted in putting it together, I think it'll be very very informative when it comes before the board. Thank you. This is obviously a non-action item, but we'll entertain a public comment if there is any. All right, seeing none, we'll close public comment. Move on to the next item, which is G1, Street Operations Report for October of 2012. First of all, I want to compliment Curtis Horton. I had a gentleman call me about some potholes, and they were actually quite deep, and the repair was made within a day. So kudos to our street personnel. They do a great job. Any questions regarding the report for October?
Yes.
Sure, John.
Do we save money in months like this last one we had where there's not a lot of snow on the ground? And if so, maybe throw that in?
No. That flood and the days we spent working it overtime completely.
Okay. All right. At least it wasn't a combination of snow and rain like we've had in previous years. That's right. Okay. Well, if I have no further comments or questions, we'll move on to the next item, which is item G2, Project Status Report. Darren puts this report together for us each month. Any questions from members of the commission? Darren, with respect to the Carson City Freeway Landscaping Project, what's the status of the irrigation sleeve installation?
It's done. The sleeve, it's done, and we're NDOT has committed money,
supplement right.
Money to us, so we feel like that issue is resolved.
Resolved, okay. Yeah. All right, great. Any other questions by members of the commission regarding anything in this report? Okay, seeing none. No comments from members of the public on this item? All right, we'll close public comment. Come to item G3, future agenda items. Patrick?
We've got multiple items that we're waiting to break, and we'll see how many do by the time we have our next meeting. We've got two contracts we're looking to close out, Roof Street and the Carson Paving. We've got two pending agreements with the Nevada Department of Transportation, one for Fairview Drive safety improvements and one for more safe routes to school radar signs and such. And we're also keeping tabs on our friends of the aging disability, or not agents, DHCFP, the folks that do Medicaid, as far as progress with them addressing this issue that we have with the paratransit ridership. So I want you to let you know we're keeping tabs on them, and we expect to come before you again whenever we have anything to report.
Okay, great. Thank you, Patrick. Any item that any member of the commission would like to have placed on the next agenda? Okay. Seeing none, we'll move on to commission comments. I have a comment. Obviously, this is my last RTC meeting, and I just want to say it's been a pleasure and a privilege working with everyone. You know, it's interesting because RTC, this assignment is kind of coveted, I think, by members of the board. Because in large measure, what we do, you know, has a direct and meaningful and visible effect on how people perceive Carson City. I mean, the state of our streets, you know, the effectiveness of the signage, progress being made on the completion of the freeway. I mean, those are all very visible tributes to not only a fine commission, but a tremendous staff. Working with you has been a real pleasure. Anyway, carry on and do good work.
You want me to say something?
You don't have to.
All right. And this is where, this, with lack of anything else to do, seeing that it's the chair that we're talking about here, I have to jump up and ask you to hand the gavel to your vice chair over here. Not that he needs to bang it, but ask you to come down so we can give something to you.
A little discussion perhaps on freeway landscaping, because we did spend quite a few meetings having some part or some of those meetings discussing freeway landscaping. And I would make a little more emphasis on that one chart where you showed that the revenue had been declining since 2007, and in the last 2 years it's leveled off. That's actually good. It's not an increase, but it's not declining anymore. And perhaps a little more emphasis on, while it's not increasing, it's certainly not decreasing, and that's a good thing.
Thank you, Jim. No request for additional information? Okay. Well, I think it's a very comprehensive report. Patrick, thank you very much. And to Darren, whoever assisted in putting it together, I think it'll be very, very informative when it comes before the board. Thank you. This is obviously a non-action item, but we'll entertain a public comment if there is any. All right. Seeing none, we'll close public comment. Move on to the next item, which is G1, Street Operations Report for October of 2012. First of all, I want to compliment Curtis Horton. I had a gentleman call me about some potholes, and they were actually quite deep, and the repair was made within a day. So kudos to our street personnel. They do a great job. Any questions regarding the report for October?
Yes.
Sure, John.
Do we save money in months like this last one we had where there's not a lot of snow on the ground? And if so, maybe throw that in.
No. That flood and the days we spent working it overtime completely.
Decimated any savings. Okay. All right. At least it wasn't a combination of snow and rain like we've had in previous years. That's right. Okay, well, if I have no further comments or questions, we'll move on to the next item, which is item G2, Project Status Report. Darren puts this report together for us each month. Any questions from members of the commission? Darren, with respect to the Carson City Freeway Landscaping Project, what's the status of the irrigation sleeve installation?
It's done. The sleeve, it's done, and we're... NDOT has committed money,
supplement
money to us, so we feel like that issue is resolved.
Resolved, okay. Yeah. All right, great. Any other questions by members of the commission regarding anything in this report? Okay, seeing none. No comments from members of the public on this item? All right, we'll close public comment. Come to item G3, future agenda items. Patrick?
We've got multiple items that we're waiting to break, and we'll see how many do by the time we have our next meeting. We've got two contracts we're looking to close out, Roof Street and the Carson Paving. We've got two pending agreements with the Nevada Department of Transportation, one for Fairview Drive safety improvements and one for more safe routes to school, radar signs and such. And we're also keeping tabs on our friends at the Aging and Disability, or not Aging, DHCFP, the folks that do Medicaid, as far as progress with them addressing this issue that we have with the paratransit ridership, so I want you to let you know we're keeping tabs on them, and we expect to come before you again whenever we have anything to report.
Okay, great. Thank you, Patrick. Any item that any member of the commission would like to have placed on the next agenda? Okay. Seeing none, we'll move on to commission comments. I have a comment. Obviously, this is my last RTC meeting, and I just want to say it's been a pleasure and a privilege working with everyone. You know, it's interesting because RTC, this assignment is kind of coveted, I think, by members of the board. Because in large measure, what we do, you know, has a direct and meaningful and visible effect on how people perceive Carson City. I mean, the state of our streets, you know, the effectiveness of the signage, progress being made on the completion of the freeway. I mean, those are all very visible tributes to not only a fine commission, but a tremendous staff. Working with you has been a real pleasure. Anyway, carry on and do good work.
You want me to say something?
You don't have to.
All right. And this is where, this, with lack of anything else to do, seeing that it's the chair that we're talking about here, I have to jump up and ask you to hand the gavel to your vice chair over here. Not that he needs to bang it, but ask you to come down so we can give something to you. Okay, and I have to make sure that I recognize Mr. Larry Hastings, who is a former member of the Carson City RTC and a great guy to work with, and I'm sure Shelley can attest as well.
Absolutely.
Who came here in honor of this and helped contribute to this. Before I read this, I have to make sure that everybody knows that I wasn't able to get a hold of all the members, but I was able to get contributions from many of you, including Larry, and even from staff, Andy, and otherwise. And there are no four-letter words on here, so just make sure it's clear.
A paper certificate would have been fine.
It would have, but it would not have sufficed. Right. So we told her she couldn't go with a bang, nor a whimper. So I will read it aloud. Presented to Shelley Aldean in appreciation of your 10 years of service as a member of the Carson City Regional Transportation Commission. And this is where the contributions came in. Your service can only be described as devoted, astute, savvy, inspiring, dedicated, persistent, efficient, tenacious, tireless, effective, diligent, reliable, decisive, committed, superb, helpful, and last but not least, thorough.
You know, I sound like a real bore.
No. A lot of good words there presented on this December 10th. And I think thorough is thorough. We just had to have thorough at the end, of course. So here you are. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pat. Hey. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Even though you already had a few words, had a few more.
A few more. Well, I don't want to dominate the conversation, although I typically do. This is a beautiful plaque, and thank you again. It's been a privilege working with all of you. And, I feel when people, they come up to me and they say, well, what are you going to do? I mean, you've been serving, I've been serving longer than 10 years, but in my capacity as a member of the Board of Supervisors, I feel like they're writing my epitaph or something. I mean, I'm going to be around, and I'm going to be available to work on worthy causes. This is a great community, and I want to continue to participate and contribute in any way I can. So thanks, everyone, and good luck. We have a lot of challenges ahead, but I know we have the ability and the tenacity and all these other qualities that are attributed to me can be equally attributed to you. So do good work. Thank you.
Shelley, I could sum that plaque up in one word. Leader.
Well, thank you, Tom. I appreciate that very much.
And Shelley, you've been a good mentor to me, and I certainly appreciate it. But the next time you invite me to Starbucks, I'm wearing the force shield.
Well, let me tell you, that's kind of a joke between Jim and me, because I have pressured him on more than one occasion. In fact, most recently, when he applied for reappointment to the RTC, he was not intending to sign up for additional time on this commission, and I persuaded him that his involvement was imperative, and he makes a wonderful contribution. And before we adjourn this meeting, I want him to give his report on the TTD, because he's been a faithful attendee of those meetings, and he did that in part not only because of his background as a former member of NDOT, but because Patrick didn't have the time and was a little bit concerned about being cast in too many roles. So I appreciate you too, Jim, and thank you for signing up for another stint on the RTC, because having that continuity is going to be very important. Thank you. We're still on commissioner comments, so with that, I'd like to ask Jim to give us a summation of what transpired at the last Tahoe Transportation District meeting.
The last TTD meeting was last Friday. It was a replacement meeting for a special meeting that was November 30th, but on November 30th, it was the snowstorm, and there wasn't going to be a quorum. So I attended the meeting on behalf of all of us, and there were two items on the agenda. The reason why there was a special meeting was it was important to approve an award to Amador Stage Lines quickly for the operation of the North Tahoe Truckee Coordinated Ski Shuttle Bus. This is probably the first real regional bus service that's consistent with the spirit and intent of the 1969 and then revisited 1980 TRPA compact. So there's a lot of enthusiasm for that. The bus will go all the way up to Boreal on Donner Summit and will also.
Okay, and I have to make sure that I recognize Mr. Larry Hastings, who is a former member of the Carson City RTC and a great guy to work with, and I'm sure Shelley can attest as well, who
absolutely
came here in honor of this and helped contribute to this. Before I read this, I have to make sure that everybody knows that I wasn't able to get a hold of all the members, but I was able to get contributions from many of you, including Larry, and even from staff, Andy, and otherwise. And there are no four-letter words on here, so just make sure it's clear.
A paper certificate would have been fine.
It would have, but it would not have sufficed. Right. So we told her she couldn't go with a bang, nor a whimper. So I will read it aloud. Presented to Shelley Aldean in appreciation of your 10 years of service as a member of the Carson City Regional Transportation Commission. And this is where the contributions came in. Your service can only be described as devoted, astute, savvy, inspiring, dedicated, persistent, efficient, tenacious, tireless, effective, diligent, reliable, decisive, committed, superb, helpful, and last but not least, thorough.
You know, I sound like a real bore.
No. A lot of good words there presented on this December 10th. And I think thorough is thorough. We just had to have thorough at the end, of course. So here you are. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Patrick. Hey. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Even though you already had a few words, have a few more.
A few more. Well, I don't want to dominate the conversation, although I typically do. This is a beautiful plaque, and thank you again. It's been a privilege working with all of you. And, I feel when people, they come up to me and they say, well, what are you going to do? I mean, you've been serving, I've been serving longer than 10 years, but in my capacity as a member of the Board of Supervisors, I feel like they're writing my epitaph or something. I mean, I'm going to be around, and I'm going to be available to work on worthy causes. This is a great community, and I want to continue to participate and contribute in any way I can. So thanks, everyone, and good luck. We have a lot of challenges ahead, but I know we have the ability and the tenacity and all these other qualities that are attributed to me can be equally attributed to you. So do good work. Thank you.
Shelley, I could sum that plaque up in one word. Leader.
Well, thank you, Tom. I appreciate that very much.
And Shelley, you've been a good mentor to me, and I certainly appreciate it. But the next time you invite me to Starbucks, I'm wearing the force shield.
Well, let me tell you, that's kind of a joke between Jim and me, because I have pressured him on more than one occasion. In fact, most recently, when he applied for reappointment to the RTC, he was not intending to sign up for additional time on this commission, and I persuaded him that his involvement was imperative, and he makes a wonderful contribution. And before we adjourn this meeting, I want him to give his report on the TTD, because he's been a faithful attendee of those meetings, and he did that in part not only because of his background as a former member of NDOT, but because Patrick didn't have the time and was a little bit concerned about being cast in too many roles. So I appreciate you too, Jim, and thank you for signing up for another stint on the RTC, because having that continuity is going to be very important. Thank you. We're still on commissioner comments, so with that, I'd like to ask Jim to give us a summation of what transpired at the last Tahoe Transportation District meeting.
The last TTD meeting was last Friday. It was a replacement meeting for a special meeting that was November 30th, but on November 30th, it was the snowstorm, and there wasn't going to be a quorum. So I attended the meeting on behalf of all of us, and there were two items on the agenda. The reason why there was a special meeting was it was important to approve an award to Amador Stage Lines quickly for the operation of the North Tahoe Truckee Coordinated Ski Shuttle Bus. This is probably the first real regional bus service that's consistent with the spirit and intent of the 1969 and then revisited 1980 TRPA compact. So there's a lot of enthusiasm for that. The bus will go all the way up to Boreal on Donner Summit and will also go to Squaw Valley and North Star and all the rest of the ski resorts in the area. None of the funds are coming from the TTD. It's 100% entirely funded by the ski resorts, the lodging properties, and the city of South Lake Tahoe. The other item on the agenda was recommended approval of the Lake Tahoe Regional Transportation Plan, Mobility 2035, and certification of the accompanying Environmental Impact Report. We need to remember that the Environmental Impact Report is a CEQA, which is a California Environmental Quality Act document. It's typically more stringent than what would be a NEPA document, which is an Environmental Impact Statement. And this is at the programmatic level, which is the program planning level. It can include lots of projects, but it's not at the project-specific level looking for environmental clearance, alternatives, and things like that for a specific project. And that was approved. And the last thing of interest, and I think this will be a lot of interest for most of us here, is that the Surface Transportation Reauthorization Bill, MAP 21, did not carry forward the Lake Tahoe MPO. And there's a lot of conversation been going back and forth about this. And both governors have now signed a letter to the Secretary of Transportation that this was an oversight, and it was never intended that the MAP 21 legislation would cancel or cease the Lake Tahoe MPO after it was so long and hard fought to get. Also, I understand that at least one of the MPOs in Nevada, if not two of them, have written letters of support. All the congressional delegation that's involved in the Lake Tahoe Basin from both states have also written letters of support. The MPO is a designation, but it doesn't really change a lot of what the TTD does because they still have a function, they still have funding, they still have the things to do. But losing the MPO is in their feeling, not a very good thing because it was too hard fought. And unless there's anything else, that's pretty much it, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Jim. And, of course, the TTD is specifically mentioned in the Bi-State Compact. So that's why, as Jim suggested, it will continue. But obviously there are advantages to having an MPO at the lake.
Mostly funding advantages.
Right.
And the executive director of the TTD said that, you know, life's going to go on one way or the other, funding or not, MPO funding or not, and that it's believed that in the next Surface Transportation Reauthorization Bill, this will be specifically addressed and put back in.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Jim? All right. Seeing none, again, Jim, thank you for your attendance to those meetings. I'm sure having you there is a real asset. Okay, moving on to public comment. Any member of the public wish to comment on anything concerning the RTC? Seeing no public comment, we'll move on to the last agenda item, adjournment.
Move. We should let the chairman adjourn.
Yeah. Should I pass the gavel?
Oh, yeah, stay here.
In other words, the adjournment dies for lack of a second.
I'll second it, too.
Thanks, everyone.
I wish you luck on Wednesday.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. You're going to need it.
Oh.
I heard the radio this morning about the Sierra Club came out. Basically, the thing.
Hey, thank you for coming. Come on. Can I bring out the big dogs?
Yeah, go for it. a great step forward.
It's a step forward.
You know, the irony of this is everybody knows the beauty center has a mission. And so the lake is a big loser in the economy and the people who live in the base and the people who live in the base. Because we'll have, you know, nothing that really stimulates development. And then the rest of the world like a new part of all the issues.
You've got sidewalk, you've got driveway. Yeah. And you've got sidewalk.
But you're involved in the fight.
That's ugly.
Yep. What do you think about monorail?
Is there a good.
I'll be there
all day.
That's what I think.
Go to Squaw Valley and North Star and all the rest of the ski resorts in the area. None of the funds are coming from the TTD. It's 100% entirely funded by the ski resorts, the lodging properties, and the city of South Lake Tahoe. The other item on the agenda was recommended approval of the Lake Tahoe Regional Transportation Plan, Mobility 2035, and certification of the accompanying environmental impact report. We need to remember that the Environmental Impact Report is a sequel, which is a California Environmental Quality Act document. It's typically more stringent than what would be a NEPA document, which is an Environmental Impact Statement. And this is at the programmatic level, which is the program planning level. It can include lots of projects, but it's not at the project-specific level, looking for environmental clearance, alternatives, and things like that for a specific project. And that was approved. And the last thing of interest, and I think this will be a lot of interest for most of us here, is that the Surface Transportation Reauthorization Bill, MAP 21, did not carry forward the Lake Tahoe MPO. And there's a lot of conversation been going back and forth about this. And both governors have now signed a letter to the Secretary of Transportation that this was an oversight and it was never intended that the MAP 21 legislation would cancel or cease the Lake Tahoe MPO after it was so long and hard fought to get. Also, I understand that at least one of the MPOs in Nevada, if not two of them, have written letters of support. All the congressional delegation that's involved in the Lake Tahoe Basin from both states have also written letters of support. The MPO is a designation, but it doesn't really change a lot of what the TTD does because they still have a function, they still have funding, they still have the things to do. But losing the MPO is in their feeling, not a very good thing because it was too hard fought. And unless there's anything else, that's pretty much it, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Jim. And, of course, the TTD is specifically mentioned in the Bi-State Compact. So that's why, as Jim suggested, it will continue. But obviously there are advantages to having an MPO at the lake.
Mostly funding advantages.
Right.
And the executive director of the TTD said that, you know, life's going to go on one way or the other, funding or not, MPO funding or not, and that it's believed that in the next Surface Transportation Reauthorization Bill, this will be specifically addressed and put back in.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Jim? All right. Seeing none, again, Jim, thank you for your attendance to those meetings. I'm sure having you there is a real asset. Okay, moving on to public comment. Any member of the public wish to comment on anything concerning the RTC? Seeing no public comment, we'll move on to the last agenda item, adjournment.
Move. We should let the chairman adjourn.
Yeah. Should I pass the gavel?
Oh, yeah, stay here.
In other words, the adjournment dies for lack of a second.
I'll second it, too.
Thanks, everyone.
I wish you luck on Wednesday.
Oh, thank you.
I heard the radio this morning about the Sierra Club came out. Basically, the thing.
Hey, thank you for coming. Come on, can I bring out the big dogs?
Anyway, that's. You know, the interesting thing is about that, John, is they had a private conversation. We have a group of governors.
Yeah, go for it.
our scenic ordinance. I mean, you have an elevated hill going around.
Okay.
And it may be more efficient. I'm sure it would be from a transportation standpoint. But there are other considerations that he's ignored. So, anyway. Yeah.
Obnoxious.